I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Hello. Turn your mic up, Steve.
Oh, okay. Here's
that helps.
Hello.
Busy show today. Nick DiGilio will be on in a few minutes talking about stuff that, you know, the voices in his head are talking to him about. Chuck Todd will be on, and we'll do politics 7 o'clock hour with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein. Is Governor Rauner a lock? Governor Rauner will be on with us just before 8 o'clock. Had his State of the State address yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Hoge is in Minneapolis. We'll check in with him for the Super Bowl. It is minus 27 wind chill in Minneapolis this morning.
You know, it's really...
Or as I like to call it, Thursday.
Right, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Not unusual.
Pluto?
Breakfast with the Blackhawk later with Adam Burrish. We like Adam a lot. Mm-hmm. I know you don't like him, Dave.
I like him.
I like Adam
what?
Burrish. What are you talking about?
A lot.
He's doing a great job on TV.
Yeah, he is.
I remember last summer, it was the day of the eclipse, and we were playing in a Blackhawks tournament out at beautiful Butterfield Country Club. Mm-hmm. And Burrish was in a golf cart, and a group either in front of me or behind me, and it was slow, so we were talking quite a bit. And I said, dude, you got to get on TV. I mean, you're like, look at you, you pretty boy. Mm-hmm. You know hockey. You're a funny guy. You got to get on TV. Now look at him. Big Shot TV guy.
You to remind him of that conversation.
That I made him?
Yeah. Another star made by Steve Cochran.
Hold on. Let me write this down. Remind Adam I made him.
There you go.
At 6:11, I got an important text question for you today. Why do you not vote? No judgment. Consider it a mini focus group. Why do you not vote? You're not going to have to give up your name. All we have is your area code when you text. Why do you not vote? Sandberg talked to some people last week and got some interesting answers we talked about earlier in the week. But in an effort to make America vote again, we got to talk about the reasons why people don't vote.
I hope people don't give us a reason. Well, my vote doesn't count.
Doesn't matter. We're not judging.
It's true.
We're not judging.
Can we give advice?
No, let's get the answers first.
Okay.
Let's get the answers before we start handing out the answers.
Okay.
Time for the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
I mean, you know how hard it is for me to not judge.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Yeah, item number one. Chicago cops stripped of powers as the FBI probes ripoffs of drug dealers. You know, this is right out of a bad or maybe a good cable show.
Right.
Law and Order episode, an episode of The Wire. Cops bust a drug dealer and then make them go out and sell more drugs, take some of their money.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Total shakedown. Yeah. A sergeant and three officers stripped of their police powers. This was also a joint investigation with the FBI, too.
And again, this is the fraction of a fraction of a fraction. But the one bad cop, this is not a cliche, one bad cop makes it bad for all cops.
Yep, it sure does.
Next. Wait, I thought we were duck quacking today. Weren't you duck quacking for me today, Joe? What happened to the duck quack? Oh, there you go. Yeah, give me that one. Kim Fox is recalling blatant sexual harassment in the Cook County justice system, including in her predecessor Alvarez's office, and I guess she's prepared to talk about it, huh?
Yeah, she made the claim, and there's a collection of stories about 17 women in Illinois politics, and it's a book called No, My Place, and it talks about how these politicians, 17 women, battled sexism, harassment, misconduct on the job, also named in there Lisa Madigan.
Named in there as someone who was a victim of it?
Yes.
Okay. Next. Yeah, come on, man. That's a winner. That's just too good. Next, after nearly 7 months, the results of an independent study to gauge the fairness and accuracy of residential assessments in Cook County is yet to be released. The Democratic primary for assessor is approaching. You don't think, I mean, come on, you don't think that they're holding the results of this till after the primary?
Yeah.
What?
I think so.
What?
I think so.
Next. It just gets better. U.S. is targeting the American, us, we're targeting global sports corruption. Prosecutors are seeking information about some of the world's biggest sports organizations. Do you remember when FIFA got busted a couple of years ago, Dave?
Yes.
The top dogs at FIFA, the inner circle of FIFA, the FIFA big shots. Well, many of them went to jail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was all about accepting bribes and the money that exchanged hands for certain favors.
And one of the biggest, most obvious, now we're really out of control things was when FIFA placed the World Cup in Qatar, where the daytime temperature is 1,000 degrees.
Yeah.
And no one could possibly play there. So they are also looking at, not surprisingly, the USOC and the IOC, the International Olympic Committee for Bribes for Bids, and the USOC for Bribes for Bids. We never had a complete answer on this, but there was a lot of rumors going around that the Chicago contingent was asked regularly for money.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had paid up, we would have had the games, mm-hmm. and Rio would not have, but we did not.
You mean you're suggesting that Chicago wouldn't have been voted out on the first ballot?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sending exactly. a message. If you don't pay, you
right.
don't play.
I always thought that. By the way, 28 Russian Olympic athletes have had their doping bans overturned this morning. So the Court of Arbitration ruled that evidence against the 28 that they broke the doping rules in Sochi is insufficient. So we don't know how many of those Russian athletes are now going to try and compete in South Korea.
Are they going to be allowed to?
They're going to try to. It starts in 8 days. So.
But the problem is that the Russian Olympic Committee is suspended. So the Russian athletes who are...
So none of the athletes will be sanctioned.
They have to compete under a neutral flag.
Right. And so, some retired, too.
And so, yeah, some aren't active in their sports anymore. So,
I got nothing other than we'll wait and see. Next. More than 1 million Twitter followers have disappeared since a Times investigation about the proliferation of fake accounts. This is the buying followers thing that came up the other day. And it's something that has existed for a while. And, Twitter continues to fight it. Because your stamp of success is the amount of followers you have. It's like, you know what Twitter is? Twitter's middle school.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, how many people hang out with me? How many friends do I have?
There's some more breaking Twitter news this morning. Twitter says that now 1.4 million people interacted with Kremlin-linked accounts during the election cycle. Double what they said last week.
And I guess that'll go up.
Yeah, probably.
That would be my guess, yeah. One more. Metro hikes begin today. Adult and reduced fare one-way tickets will rise by a quarter in all zones. Monthly fares, the most popular ticket type among Metro riders, will increase between $9 and $12.50. You know, I got to say, $12.50 a month to just jump on a Metro train, right? Anywhere you want to go?
I guess it's not bad. I never ever take the Metro. I don't remember the last time I took the train.
I've never been on the train, and I think it's a great deal.
I think I was a teenager.
Guys, I've never been on the Metro.
Yeah, I've never been on a bus in
this. Just for comparison, I think the average parking, if you were to buy monthly parking, would be more than $300, maybe even
$400.
Easily. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's over $400 to park in the city. Downtown, I'm talking about here in the Loop.
But it's much cheaper to street park.
Yeah, but you have to drive around for 15 or 16 hours to find a spot.
Completely kidding.
10 ride tickets will go from $4.25 to $7.75. Again, that's a big jump, but it's still a deal. It's like when people complain about the cost of a stamp.
Oh, God.
For 46 cents, 47, 48 cents, whatever it is?
What are stamps?
I can slap a stamp on an envelope and send something from here to, L.A.?
Or just do what I do.
Alaska.
Borrow one from Dave.
I can't remember
cheaper.
The last time I mailed something. I can't remember.
Well, let me show you. I've got an envelope right here. This is going to go out in a few minutes. By the way, they've moved everything else out of this building. Do we still have a mail slot?
Yes.
Yeah, where's the mail
but
going?
But I have a problem with the mail slot. Maybe I should tell you guys off the air.
Now you got to tell us.
I mailed two things from that mail slot. Both. I know you're not supposed to do this in the mail, but they were gift cards to people who don't live in town. And one got to their destination. The other did not.
Did you drop them from the seventh floor?
Nope. I dropped them right here. Both same slot, same time.
I think we need a full investigation.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, Steve, I just wanted to add there was a bonus top six, but somebody in the newsroom loves us here at our company. People got bonuses when the tax cuts and things like that. We got an ice machine.
What now?
Wait, wait, wait. This is the happiest Mary has ever been.
You were happy about this.
Hold on a second. I don't know this story.
We got an ice machine up in the news, like right outside the newsroom. We have a new, cool ice machine. You have to squat down.
I don't think it's quite new. It came from the 18th floor, I believe.
Yeah. It's about the size.
Well, they were living large on the 18th floor.
Well, it's probably filled with E. coli.
They all moved and they gave us the ice machine.
Mary, I have some bad news.
Sorry. What?
I think it's only Mary Sandberg. I think it's temporary.
Why?
I think it belongs to a muckety muck, and they're going to take it.
Well,
it's like a tease.
Was a corporate floor, but the corporate offices have already moved.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they needed a place to keep it for a while until they found a new place for it.
Stop well, buy your own damn ice machine.
I'm using it now.
Well, hold on a second. Back this up for a second. Why do you care about an ice machine?
Because I fill my water bottle every morning.
It is very nice.
Okay.
And it's the good kind of ice, like pellet things that are
size. You don't like room temperature water?
No.
You don't like crushed ice?
I do like crushed ice. I'm happy with any ice machine they were going. I didn't know I needed an ice machine here until they've just put it in, and now I need it.
That's very fun.
What if I got you an ice cube tray?
No, I don't want to deal with a tray.
But it's making it difficult to open the refrigerator, I must add.
Well, I don't use the
refrigerator.
Well, when I have to clean it out on
Fridays.
That's a whole other subject you don't want to bring up.
No,
I don't know how people use community refrigerators.
If you twist your knee, I can make you an ice bag upstairs now.
Well, all right. Well, let's plan on that.
Do it. So we can watch Sandberg use the ice machine.
We can ice Steve's knee every day.
Larry Wirt will buy the company a new ice machine. He's rolling in it. And a top six brought to you by America Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Man.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochran show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Already back in his footy pajamas at the house that Nick lives in. Here's Nick. Hi, buddy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
I have exciting news for you. You have a Nick Cage movie this weekend, right?
No, next week.
What is it?
He's got two coming out, actually. One's called Mom and Dad.
Okay.
And,
is that a comedy?
No. It's where it's basically an epidemic of parents trying to kill their kids.
Oh, isn't that pleasant?
And Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair are trying to kill their kids, and their kids are trying to get away from them. And this is happening like nationwide. It's like The Purge, but with parents killing their kids.
And again, why would anyone watch that?
Well, I don't know. It's the trailer has crazy Nicolas Cage in it, and I always enjoy crazy Nicolas Cage.
Well, that's why you're going to be excited by this, because I know those movies are next week. There is an app that has been developed or is about to be released that can insert Nicolas Cage into any movie. So in other words, you take any clip from a film, you use this app, and you can put Nick Cage in that movie.
That is outstanding.
Yeah,
is it available now?
I don't know. This is something on Reddit that was forwarded to me. So just search Nick Cage in Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T-T. And you'll have fun for hours. All right, Winchester, what is that?
New horror movie, and it's a haunted house movie, and it's based on a true story, and this is absolutely real. And by the way, this is Helen Mirren's first horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Took her a long time to get to the horror genre. Jason Clark is also in it. And it's based on a true story. There is actually this enormous mansion that exists, that where the owner of the mansion, which is a woman, Sarah Winchester, who is the heir to the firearms company, she was convinced that the house was haunted by ghosts who were killed by firearms. So she began building having these extra rooms built and these maze of stairs to try and keep the spirits at bay. And this you can actually go to this house, and I believe it's in England, and you can tour the house. And they have these stairwells that just lead to nowhere. There are hundreds of doors that kind of open up and don't go anywhere. And it's a real house. And so this movie is based upon the story of the woman who made all the changes to the house, and that the house was indeed haunted. And incredible, like, you know, incredible a tourist attraction that people have gone to. Very strange and very weird, and evidently, according to this movie, place was haunted and there's ghosts.
There's three other films with no real giant names in the cast, except Bilal, A New Breed of Hero, and Ian McShane's in it. But also, Michael Gross. Is this the Family Ties, Michael Gross?
Yeah, he's lending his voice to this animated film, yeah.
It's funny, because I think it's Antenna TV runs, Family Ties reruns. And I was flipping through, and I saw one, and I go, whatever happened to that dude? Well, apparently he's doing animated, huh?
He's doing, yeah, he works every once in a while. I always, you see, when I think of Michael Gross, and because I'm a weirdo, I don't necessarily think of Family Ties, because that wasn't a show that was on my radar in the 80s. But I think of Tremors. I think of the underground giant worms that were attacking as Kevin Bacon, Fred Ward, and Michael Gross. Michael Gross. It's a great movie. If you've not, you know, they've made about seven Tremors movies.
It's time to increase your meds.
The first one is great. I'm telling you, the first Tremors movie is great. Michael Gross and Reba McEntire play this couple who have a panic room in their basement filled with guns. And they just start blowing the crazy giant worms away for like 10 minutes. There's this 10-minute sequence where it's Reba McEntire and Michael Gross shooting at giant underground worms.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awesome. Great. So Bilal, A New Breed of Hero. I got 10 seconds for each of these so I can give you a good plug for Movie Club. Bilal, any thoughts on that?
It's been waiting around for a long time. It was not screened for the critics.
Not good.
Animated.
Not good.
Based
sign.
On a true story. Yeah.
Living Among Us.
Living Among Us is a vampire movie, and the only reason that it's coming out in theaters, it's also going to be on video on demand. The only reason I'm really curious about it, it's one of John Hurd's last movies.
Okay.
A great actor, great character actor, and he plays a vampire in it, so I'm kind of looking forward to seeing
this
that.
Is the one where the news crew goes to interview the vampires?
Yes, yes, yes.
Braven, B-R-A-V-E-N.
Yeah, this is Jason Momoa, who is your Aquaman, big, muscular, long-haired dude. He executive produced this movie. He plays a logger. He and his father go to a hunting cabin, and they get attacked by a bunch of drug traffickers. And then, you know, Aquaman's got to start shooting people.
Next Film Club screening is the classic, The Philadelphia Story. Nick DeGiglio with his special guest, Patty Vasquez, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's right. Patty's going to be there. She's going to I was talking to Patty, and it's like seriously one of her very favorite movies of all time. She knows every single line of dialogue.
How about that?
To it. And I was like,
I didn't know that.
You got to introduce the movie with me. So Patty and I are going to introduce the movie. We'll watch it, and it's a classic. Jimmy Stewart, who won an Academy Award for it, Katharine Hepburn, and the great Cary Grant. And these are three movie stars, one of the best movies ever made. It's this Tuesday the 6th. It's $14 to get in, and it's free popcorn and free parking, and amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats now. It's going to be fun.
All right. Once you do the research on this Nick Cage app, let us know if it's already up and running, because the public will demand access.
Oh, no. I want it now.
An app where Nicolas Cage could be dropped into any movie, because we thought he was in them all anyway.
I'm going to put him in The Philadelphia Story. And that'll be the version we show on Tuesday.
I like to put him in Beaches. All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right, man.
That's Nicolas Cage. Check Todd coming up. Headlines first. That's next. 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm friends with the monster.
Oh, he's a monster.
I'm sitting there tweeting.
Monster.
Big, big, big tweeting.
I love you. It's a guy, but I love you.
That's right. The monster. Monster Chuck standing by. Good morning, monster. How are you?
I'm all right. It's a new nickname. My second one, I guess, you know.
What happened at that lunch that you were a monster? Bad table manners?
Let's just say the topic turned to the investigation.
Oh, I see. Not his favorite topic, mm-hmm. Yes.
When the topic turned, we spent a long time talking about immigration, all this other stuff. It's off the record, so... But for topically, if you want to know, it was, and at that point, he only had one network on his mind. And so Lester and I got a lot of attention.
The network A-Team had lunch with the president the other day prior to the State of the Union address, where he teed up his bipartisan address. All right. Now, look, I think it's hard to argue that he didn't deliver the address. However, I would argue that if you gave Donald Trump a quiz of what he just said 10 minutes after he walked off the stage and from the podium, he couldn't tell you.
No, he was definitely teleprompter Trump on that front. I think they, you know, whatever decision they made on trying to insert so many attempts at applause, I think actually hurt them, made the speech harder to follow, harder to sort of wrap your arms around. I mean, he does not know how to read a speech off a teleprompter, because while he wants to bathe in the applause, it's terrible watching for the viewer. You speak through applause. You want to make the applause have an impact.
Right.
You learn how to speak through it. Barack Obama was very good at that. Ronald Reagan was very good at that. You speak through the applause. It sort of keeps your momentum going.
Right.
And it's better for the TV viewer. For a guy that cares so much about the viewer, he actually miscalculated on that applause gambit.
An hour and 20 minutes and 30 minutes in timed applause.
Well, 2,500, it's interesting. Basically, a speech is the same length as most of the yeah. Wendy Clinton speeches, right? Except 2,500 fewer words. 2,500 fewer words.
Wow.
Same amount of time. That shows you how much applause, I mean,
and a pace
got
issue.
Inserted.
Yeah. All right, so bipartisan, let's all get along. Can't we all get along? Let's kumbaya this thing. We're now 36 hours down the road, something like that. How are we doing?
Well, I didn't hear bipartisan in the speech. I heard a few words at the beginning. But what they sold and what they delivered, I think, were two different things. I don't think he did deliver a bipartisan speech. I was surprised at I think the headlines that indicated bipartisanship are people that didn't watch or read the speech. That was certainly what they wanted it to be, and that's what they pitched it to be.
I guess I'm referring to the specific line where he had referenced, we have to do this and work together for the American people.
Right. No, I think, yes, he uttered the words, but then when you look at how he sold immigration, he wasn't trying to sell it to the middle. He wasn't trying to reach across the aisle, if anything. Maybe, to give him the benefit of the doubt, he was simply trying to sell it to his base, because he led with the idea that, all immigrants are criminals, right? He goes down that road and then talks about the 1.8 million that he will put on a path to citizenship. Now, again, you could look at it two ways. I understand why Democrats are offended by what he said and how he said it. He conflated an issue that has nothing to do with immigration, MS-13.
Nope, we lost Chuck. Want to redial for me? He clicked off there. We'll come back with Chuck Todd from NBC News in a second. Also coming up, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, Adam Hoge from the Super Bowl, veteran journalist Joanne Lippman, former editor-in-chief at USA Today, has written a new book, which I think you're going to like. It's called That's What She Said, What Men Need to Know and Women Need to Tell Them About Working Together.
I like that.
Well, much more timely than that. All right, back to Chuck. Pick it up where you left off.
Well, no, I don't know where I left off. I was still talking to myself.
You were halfway through the bipartisan wasn't so bipartisan.
Yeah, it wasn't so bipartisan. And so on the, again, if the president's attempt on immigration was to sell his base on his plan, then I understand why he did what he did. But in trying to conflate this gang issue of MS-13 with immigration, he really offended a lot of Democrats, and a lot more than just Democrats. So he offended a lot of people with that.
Chuck, I want to ask you about the Nunes memo, but kind of a different angle. Trump is already canned Comey. He's having possible issues with Mueller now, and now with Ray saying that he has grave concerns about the accuracy of the Nunes memo.
Chris Ray, the FBI
Chris
director.
Ray, yeah, Chris Ray. It seems like now he's going to be in a showdown with his handpicked FBI director. So Trump's contentious relationship with the FBI, this is not good.
I talked to somebody who's very close to this White House, who's also had to deal with this investigation, who does not just want to believe the president about no collusion, but so far everything they have seen doesn't support collusion. And yet this person says to me, But wow, he conducts himself like he's got something to hide.
Yes, of course he does.
And this is somebody that wants to believe him.
Right.
Right. Like, this is the head scratching. Like they sit there and say, you know, all they have, everything I've seen, everything we've seen indicates that, you know, and yet he is acting like there's something more he has to hide, whether it's dealing with Comey or Ray or this memo. Whenever there's been an opportunity to thwart Mueller, he does it. Right. Whenever there's been an opportunity to thwart this investigation in some way or another, he's done it, whether it's to try to prevent Jeff Sessions from accusing himself or firing James Comey or to try to get Comey to lay off the Flynn. You know, he's always going. So we know the memo is going to get released. We know he's going to, you know, not step in. But look, I actually think that this shenanigans that Nunes has pulled around this memo, the overhyping of the memo that some of his subordinates have done, have actually undermined the original intent. The original intent was to muddy the investigation and raise questions about the FBI and how they went about targeting certain people. I think they've so oversold it that now what we see with what it is, that it's going to end up being about Carter Page, really? I mean, let's wait to see what's in the memo, but you know, I think Republicans basically bought themselves a bridge to nowhere.
The head scratcher for me continues in this continued thumping of the FBI in general in this attempt to humiliate and degrade one of the most important law enforcement agencies in the world, and certainly important to us. So you've got General John Kelly doing an interview and talking about how the memo will be released, and then ad-libbing. You know, this president wants everything out in the open. He's all about total transparency. Really? Not about Russia.
Yeah, not about Russia, not about his tax returns, not about his business dealings, not about, I mean, you know, it's transparency for everybody but Donald Trump.
General Kelly is not a guy who came in with this rep. Is he going to go out with the rep of these wingnut Republicans, my words, not yours, who continue to try to do this?
I will just say this. I've been spending a lot of time looking into Donald Trump's political works and actions over the decades before he actually announced his presidential candidacy. And this is for a longer project I'm doing. Every single relationship he has or develops goes along the lines of what we're watching with John Kelly. Once you're in, you're desperate to stay in. He makes you basically do things to prove that you're in. And he's always constantly almost making people in his inner circle prove that they should be in the inner circle. And so it is not surprising to me to see John Kelly publicly do things almost to show the president, see, I'm on your team, I'm on your side, you can trust me. And they all do it. All these folks I've talked to, they do it, and they'll sit there and say, look, you know, it's sometimes humiliating, but hey, there was a greater goal. It was about to make sure we got this deal done or to make sure we do this, right? And I'm sure John Kelly will tell you there's a greater goal. And then when the relationship ends, and every relationship with Trump ends badly, or else it wouldn't end, right. Okay? Sometimes lawsuits, counter-lawsuits, these people walk away and going, ah. And they're looking for their reputation. You know, they Trump is a mark on their resume that isn't a positive. That's the way most people, even folks that still try to keep a relationship with him, will tell me that.
Which brings me to the most stark example, at least this week, of loyalty only goes one way. Joe Manchin is as middle of the road a member of the Senate as you're going to find. And as recently as a couple of days ago, he said, yeah, you ought to stand for the president. Yeah, you ought to stand for the anthem. And yesterday, Vice President Pence, who doesn't spend a lot of time on Twitter, got all over Twitter and slammed Joe Manchin. So there again, loyalty goes one way and you can get out.
Yeah, well, I do think Joe Manchin, remember the late Jim Hightower, sort of a gadfly politician in Texas, and he used to say, the only thing you can find in the middle of the road are yellow lines and dead armadillos. I think Joe Manchin's finding out in these polarized times, it ain't easy. You try to be in the middle of the road and you may be joining the armadillos.
You know what? Make that a T-shirt. You know how well that would sell? The podcast is 1947.
I love those old colloquial guys. I miss those those Southern and Texas yarn politicians. Yarn for you.
You know, a great Southern line. You just spurred the memory of this. There's a guy named Howell Heflin, senator from Alabama, I believe.
Yep.
Always banging heads with Ted Kennedy. And there's a picture in Time magazine. And the picture in Time magazine is Ted Kennedy being very friendly with a young woman on a boat somewhere on Cape Cod. It was shown to Howell Heflin, and the line was, "It appears Senator Kennedy has changed his opinion on offshore drilling."
Yeah.
One of the greatest ad-libs I've ever seen.
All right. God. Good luck with that, Steve. I don't know what you're talking about, man, but I've got to go.
You're out of time. Tick, tick, tick. Meet the Press Sunday, MTP Daily, every afternoon at 1947, the podcast. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you.
See you later. I got to look up when that was. I feel like it was late 80s.
Oh,
maybe.
That's funny.
Early
though.
90s.
I'm going to look it up.
It's a great line.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Texter from the 708, Steve, I haven't voted since the 90s. Every time it seems the debates have become a mudslinging match. Nobody ever talks about what they're going to do if elected. The debates are worse than an old Jerry Springer show. Why aren't you voting? That's the text question today. No judgment. Collecting answers for Make America Vote Again. Because we got to vote. You want true change, you got to vote. Whether you support the Republicans, the Democrats, you got to vote. 312-981-7200. But it starts with why don't you vote? All right. And we'll talk about some of that more after 7 o'clock. Is it just me or is the Super Bowl not buzz heavy this year? Mm. Am I missing it? It just doesn't feel like a normal Super Bowl.
I think it feels pretty normal the week leading up to it. I mean, they had the media night on Monday to kind of kick things off.
But outside of the sports world, talking about it nonstop, the general population doesn't seem to be that excited.
I usually get a couple of Super Bowl party invites. I think I've had one. I just don't think people are really having big parties this year. Or maybe they are. I don't know.
I'm
just not getting invited.
I got invited to a whole bunch.
Okay. Can I come to some?
No, I think I don't detect any real difference. Maybe there's a little bit of a feeling that ho-hum, it's the same old thing, the Patriots again. But I would think that would be offset a bit by the presence of the Eagles, who are kind of an interesting story, being there for the first time in years, being there with their backup quarterback, Alshon Jeffries dissing the Patriots, saying we don't care about their dynasty. I mean, there's some good stories there.
Is this his ninth Super Bowl? Brady?
Oh, Brady? Yeah, I thought you meant Alshon Jeffrey.
No. Eighth Super Bowl? Is that right, Joe?
It's eighth
Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eight Super Bowls.
Went to his, yeah, I mean.
Starting, as, was it his rookie year or his second year?
His first year as a starter. That was.
Just unbelievable. And the Patriots are how big a favorite on Sunday?
Like 4 to 5 points last time I looked.
Well, that's big, but it's not that big.
It's not as big as you would think,
right,
given their history.
Well, you know, the Patriots move, especially since last year's Super Bowl, get down by 70 and then win it in the second half.
Yeah, I think the Eagles are good as long as they can lead by more than 25 points. I think they'll be okay.
You get ahead of the Patriots by 2 touchdowns at any point, you should just quit. Just walk off. Yeah. Game's over.
Yeah. When's it coming?
We'll talk more about Super Bowl in the next couple of days, obviously. But Adam Hoge is coming up at 7:40. Text question, why don't you vote? 312-981-7200. Back with the news. Back with the news in just a moment. I also want to remind you, the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb is on. Dave, when is it?
Sunday, March 11th.
Can be on Dave Ennett's team or Patty Vasquez's team. But Dave would like you to be on his team.
You know what? I'm okay as long as you participate and support it.
Mm-hmm.
Go to fightforairclimb.org. Apparently, other people at the station are a little competitive.
You want everybody on your team. And that's okay.
Okay.
It's all right. Yeah. Fightforairclimb.org. Fightforairclimb.org. Help end lung disease and lung conditions that the American Lung Association fights every day. Fight for Air Climb, Sunday, March 11th, 2,340 steps of a good time. And sign up soon, WGNradio.com or fightforairclimb.org.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's the average white band. Remember the average white band? They weren't average. They were above average.
From below average white guys.
So, well, speak for yourself. Pat Brady's here. Eric Edelstein is here. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good to see you.
Just dandy.
How's your Super Bowl week going?
Are you excited about the Super Bowl?
Is that this week?
You know, you have relatives in Minnesota.
I do, and the city's in mourning because they really thought they were gonna have their own team.
Yeah, but we made the argument on the air, and I think it's legitimate. It came from a friend of mine there that if you're in the hospitality business, you didn't want the Vikings in the game because you want out of town traffic.
You know, my next door neighbor's from Philadelphia, and she told me that she's not a football fan, but she felt pride of place, so she's having an Eagles-themed Super Bowl
party. Oh, I bet Philadelphia is nuts.
And I said, so does everyone have to come in and boo when you, like...
right. You call these nachos?
She didn't know what I was talking about because she's not a football fan, but... So.
Are you having a football party?
My wife, who I love dearly...
that's a hell of a setup.
that's a great
is
start.
A professional woman, and in her own admission, this is not me saying it, she cooks once a year. On the Super Bowl, she makes chili, which is outstanding.
Okay.
Terrific chili.
Okay.
So we have a few people over and eat chili.
Okay.
So
what time would you like Pat and I to be there?
Be there by... the game should be over by 9:30, so come about
9:45, yeah.
Bring a dish.
I don't know. I guess it's me. I'm just not feeling it this year.
Yeah.
Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Mr. Edelstein.
I work at AL Media.
All right. So I want to ask Pat something here. Durkin, the head of the Republicans, is running for reelection. And what's standing as far as polls and things go that you've seen so far?
He's got about a 40-point lead. He's running against the mayor, Burridge. And he should win. But
there's something that happened this week that I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
There's a floating, rolling billboard. You know these mobile billboards that you see driving up and down Michigan Avenue? And on the mobile billboard, it's pole dancers for Durkin. All right, what's the story?
The guy behind his opponent, Dan Proft, who's a very prominent, he's kind of the less successful Steve Bannon of Illinois, kind of one of those guy bomb throwers, far right, litmus test Republicans that are destroying the party, decided that it would be a good idea to put up this billboard, a driving billboard. It's got a bunch of pole dancers. It's a pink billboard. Can't miss it. And drive it around through Jim Durkin's district, which is...
So the intimation is Jim Durkin supports strippers? What's the tie?
I don't know. It's stupid, but most of what Prof does is stupid. He spends a lot of money and loses races. But the point of the story is he decided it'd be a good idea to help his candidate, who's down 40, after they've spent $500,000, to drive this through the western suburbs so people could see it. Offensive as that is, it gets even worse. Jim Durkin's got a 16-year-old daughter, as I do.
Me too.
And we all, a lot of
That's
people.
That's right.
Do.
You have a 16-year-old too. Yeah.
And raised girls, raised kids.
Yeah.
So Prof, being the lowball guy he is, decided he's going to park this thing out in front of her high school last Friday.
Okay, so this is the kid.
This is
not
kid.
Durkin's office.
It's not Durkin's house. It's
and this is in front of the school right. where all of her friends would see it.
Well, it gets worse. He parked it at 3 o'clock. What goes on at 3 o'clock?
Kids, get,
kids
out
get out of school.
Out of school.
Yeah. Everybody, you know where it was? Right by the soccer field.
And did they deny they did this after
they called
them out on it?
Yeah, they said
that. And you have photo evidence.
Yeah, I got a photo and eyewitness evidence, and I got a picture of it. But this is where... When, as a Republican, people
get
mad.
Were they trying to hurt the girl? I mean, what's the point?
No, they're stupid and they're mean. All they're trying to do is be mean. And obviously they're trying to hurt Durkin because they know how much Durkin loves his daughter.
So they want the daughter coming home crying, Dad, you wouldn't believe how embarrassed I am. Why did this happen? That kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay, what does that have to do with politics?
Well, you know, Dick Durbin years ago had a line about, you know, for someone to go after someone's family is the lowest rung of hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, particularly with a 16-year-old girl, teenagers.
It's ridiculous.
It's out of bounds. It's outrageous. And, you know, it's another reason why people become cynical about politics. But I think sometimes we forget these are human beings. And these are human beings with families. And these are kids.
Yeah, but that's not forgetting. That's with intent.
Maybe
clearly because you're not attracting high school voters.
Right, that's with intent. That's intent to do personal damage.
Then it's malicious.
Yeah,
it is malicious, absolutely, and it's hateful.
And you know for sure the Prof is behind this.
Yeah, it's his pack. It's his guy. They're doing it. Liberty Principles Pack. They're the ones that put up all these screwball ads. They never win anything, but they fashion themselves as the new Steve Bannon Republican Party. They're the Breitbart people. And they don't fit into this state. They don't fit into this country. But
that's
and they're all making money off it.
It's ridiculous.
It's Liberty Principles Pack, Dan Proft, all these clowns. And people get mad at me as a Republican because I sometimes get on the far right and the Trump people and don't agree with them. But the reality is it's a cancer on our party. It's a cancer on the state. And these guys need to go away.
It's destroying the Republican Party. There's no question about it. And I'm no fan of the far left either. All right, let me move to the state races such as they are, because Governor Ronald will join us in, I don't know, a half hour or so. The AG race, Eric?
Yeah, I think, again, full disclosure, we're working for State Senator Kwame Raoul, who's going up on television today talking about how he was asked to fill Barack Obama's Senate seat, been a prosecutor. And I'm for him, and I think he's great, and people should check him out. But rather than just doing a pitch for him, I think in the spirit of making everybody vote, sometimes the governor's race and the more high-profile races eclipse these other ones. And today, attorney general's races in Illinois and around the country are really, really, really important, particularly in this Trump White House, because you've got a Justice Department that's rolling back civil rights, that's taking on the Dreamers, that's rolling back environmental regulations. And so the state attorney generals have ended up banding together and becoming a bit of a front line of defense for a lot of rights that people who don't agree with Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump's administration. So in other
words, in general, I think state AGs have never had a higher profile.
They've had very high profile. And so I urge people to, study the attorney general candidates in Illinois. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a dog in the fight, as they say. I think Kwame's terrific and would be a great attorney general. But as you roll out people paying attention to the March 20th primary, I think it's really important that people look beyond just the governor's race, which is important, crucial. We talk about it a lot. I'm sure we'll talk about it more. But attorney general's race is sort of the second marquee race that'll be on the ballot this spring.
I like this race a lot just because of all the candidates who have the high-profile names who are in at this time. And as you said, it's very crowded. Do you guys think that the candidates who are running, Kwame Raoul, Erica Harrell, whoever it might be, are positioning for higher office in the state?
Well, attorney general in the past in other states has been a good
wait, let's interrupt. You can aspire to higher office unless your dad's the sitting speaker.
Well, I was going to say,
right?
Lisa, he had the same last name.
With one significant exception.
Yeah, Lisa Madigan had been rumored for higher office for years and years and years, and ultimately never made that leap. But the thing about being attorney general is the line is you're on the side of the angels. You're fighting for consumers. You're fighting against criminals. You're on behalf of people against corporations and utilities. So you really, it's a dream job for anyone who's an advocacy lawyer. Politically, it's a great job because you're fighting the good fight.
And Pat, you're an Erica Harrell fan.
Yeah, and I love Kwame. He's a great guy. He's a great candidate. But Eric, I think for Republicans, is a breath of fresh air. Young, first of all, African American female, Miss America, more important, for Miss America, Harvard law grad, with a lot of great ideas. He'll bring new energy to the office. I do agree with Eric. I think this down ticket race by one step is going to be a fascinating race with great candidates and great people.
Yeah, and we want people to vote. Make America vote again. Yeah. The wild card here is Pat Quinn. Is he going to get in?
He's in, and he's running. He's not raising a lot of money. He's got
not
a name
talking
ID.
Much either.
No, I mean, he figures his strategy, it's a bit of a cynical strategy. As I've been around a long time, people know me. I'll let all these other ones battle it out, and people will go in and not be aware of these candidates and not know their names and just default to me, which I think is...
Well, but it's a problem if you don't actually identify that you're in the race, and somebody goes, this is the same Pat Quinn.
Right. Yeah, right, yeah. Right. That's right.
I got a great story on that. If I could give you 30 seconds. I had a good friend who passed away a couple years ago, appellate court justice Pat Quinn. Great guy. He was in my boss in the state attorney's office. Well, Pat Quinn runs every 4 years or 2 years, right? So Pat Quinn's in the state attorney's office, says, you know what? This might be an opportunity for me. Throws his name on court for the appellate court. He puts $3,000 in his campaign and has a bunch of beer parties.
$3,000.
$3,000.
Wins.
And wins.
Right.
Because people think they're voting for
name
Pat Quinn.
And he ended up being a great justice and unfortunately passed away. But he used to say, I'm a poster boy for merit selection. Because that's what he did.
At least he's honest about it.
Yeah, but that's how voter ID works. Yeah.
Separate from changing to a nice Irish name in the city of Chicago, what's going to make people vote? We'll talk about that coming up.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
If you go with the essential premise that most people are registered because you have to give the state credit, run by Democrats or a couple of Republicans here and there, it can't be easier to register now. You go and renew your driver's license, you can register. You can register in a million different ways. There's early voting. People swing by your house and ask you who you're voting for early. There's lots of ways to do that. But still, people just aren't voting. They're just not voting.
I think when you're talking about making or encouraging people to vote, the curriculums need to change, too. They don't have the civics they used to.
In school.
That's correct.
School curriculums. And I think that's a big issue that they take up.
It came up in a mini focus group. Sandberg was just discussing this with some successful folks, couples, parents, things of that nature. Let me just throw a few of these out here. Here's reasons people don't vote. And by the way, they're more than willing to admit they didn't vote. No likable candidates. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. They think their vote won't count, which to me has always been more of an excuse than a reason not to vote. Sick of the ads. All the ads are slanderous. They don't inform you about anything.
That's Eric's fault.
You want to be able to vote online. You want it easier. I don't think that's an unreasonable request, and I think that's one thing that could turn this, immediately. A lack of understanding or education on the candidates. That doesn't mean anybody's stupid. It just means that they don't have the knowledge of the candidates or the sources or the resources they think to figure it out. I will say, just by way of this topic right now, the newspapers do a nice job, including the Chicago Tribune, of having a rundown. And just one website I'd throw out is called Vote Smart, where you can look up any candidate in pretty much any race in the country.
And we say this every election, too. You can bring notes in. You can bring papers. And people are still amazed, like, oh, you can bring that stuff in?
You could bring in the Encyclopedia Britannica if you still have one.
If it was 1980, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's nice if you still have one.
Yeah.
Let's see. Tired. Just tired. Just tired of it all. Fatigued and apathetic. And the only way I will do it is if it were mandatory, and it should be, according to one individual. And general apathy, and we've talked about that many times here, at a time when we need more participation, not less. The people in the process have made it less appealing to go get involved in the process. In other words, why would I vote for those people? Who wouldn't want to be stuck in an elevator with them? Mm-hmm. So jump in here, boys. Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady. How do we change these attitudes? How do we get people to vote?
You know what? As you went through that lesson, as I was thinking, is what motivated me to vote, because my first vote for president was in 1980. And love or hate Reagan, to me, he was inspirational. And talk big picture, the shining city on the hill, the greatness of the country. And even going back to JFK, after he'd been elected, but he came up with, hey, we're going to put a man on the moon. And only the United States can do it. And the subtext be, we're going to beat the Russians. But I think the candidates can do something to be more. And I mean, I'm a realist on politics or pragmatist, but some of those more inspirational tones, we didn't see much of it Tuesday night. But
right. I mean, I think people vote primarily for two reasons. One is inspiration, as Pat said, and the other is fear and anger. And I think we're seeing a lot of the latter this election already, where you are seeing higher rates of turnout. The thing that, I don't want to, devolve into a civics lesson, but when people say my vote doesn't matter, that's the one that bothers me the most, because does your life matter? Does the freedoms that you have matter? And the notion that it's just going to be there whether I participate or not, I think is an arrogance that the future's not guaranteed. We all have to work for it. So that's my high and mighty.
Yeah, because the idea that you can control the math was proven wrong in a recent vote in Virginia that was decided by one vote that came down to a coin flip after a court challenge. And I would also argue that it elected Donald Trump because everybody felt like my vote's not going to matter and they stayed home.
That's right. But I also think beyond the one vote's going to swing the election, you're part of this experiment of, self-rule. And if you don't participate in it, then I do think you kind of forfeit your right to complain about it. It's just too hard and it's too important. Now, in terms of the practical things, I agree with the online piece. I've said this before. We transfer billions, if not trillions of dollars online securely every day around the world. It basically runs our global economy. The fact that you have to go stand in line on a work day and press a paper ballot in many situations to exercise your right to vote is absurd. And I don't think there's any reason we couldn't do online voting. We couldn't make voting periods longer, which we've started to do with early voting and whatnot.
I think open primaries here, too.
Open primaries would be good.
But several texters have brought that up, saying, I don't want to have to declare a party and be eliminated from voting for other people.
Yeah, why do we still do that? I mean, I know many states don't.
Well, we have a system that has been controlled. And, you know, if you have access to the ballot and you restrict access to the ballot and you make it hard for people to get on ballots and you make it hard for people to participate, then you have more control in the outcomes. That's a vestige of old machine politics going back to the 19th century.
In establishment politics like that drives low turnout. You want low turnout because only your people are going to show up.
That's right.
So who determines or resists the ability to change those rules? Who in Springfield right now? Because I can go to Madigan easily. Who else?
It's both sides.
Here's, so give me a Republican. Give me a name.
Well, the Republican argument is to what Eric's talking, which actually I agree with Eric that I would like to see. I'd like to see a voting app where you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you can vote. But the Republican argument is that tends to lead or can lead to fraud. And all this Russian interference probably plays into that conspiracy theory. But I think there are ways we can figure out, like you said, if you can transfer $1 billion, we can figure out.
Argue, too, that the Republican Party doesn't seem all that interested in determining how to stop Russia. So why worry about state races?
Yeah, but the point is that's their argument. I've never agreed with it. I have seen fraud in my life, and we used to patrol the polling places, but I think in today's day and age, that's less of a threat. And to me, it's more of an opportunity to get more voters.
Here's the other thing is, I think that when you have more people who are going to come out and participate and make it easier for them, they're going to have more of a skin in the game and feel like they have something more to participate in and feel like they have a stake in the outcome.
Right.
Right.
Right. I feel more like it does matter. Let me grab this. Colleen. Good morning, Colleen.
Hi, good morning.
Your thoughts?
So I always vote, and I'm pretty sure the primary election, the one that'll be on the 20th of March, you have to declare when you go in, yep, Republican or Democrat, right, to get the ballot. Is there any conversation about changing that so people can vote, you know, with either party that they choose based on candidate and not with party?
Yeah, thanks for the call. We just started with that. Is there current conversation about changing that?
California just went to that system. It's called a jungle primary, where basically the top two come out of the primary regardless of party. So sometimes you end up with two Democrats, sometimes you end up with two Republicans. And they've done it. I think this will be the third election cycle that they've done. I haven't heard any talk about it.
Well, the difference, there's a jungle like that, right, which is California, but then I think open, meaning that you could vote for a Democrat in one race, you'd be able to cross the ballot. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So you're not declaring.
I see.
I don't have to go and say, I want a Republican ballot. And then you're marked down forever as being a Republican.
You get the ballot and then you vote.
You can vote.
There's still two separate.
There's two still separate. I like the party system. I think that works, or it's not working right now, but it typically works. You want two parties in a democracy or the republic we have.
Yeah, but the idea of voting should be you can vote for whoever.
You can cross. And then when people say here that I'm a registered Republican or Democrat, there's no such thing. Your party affiliation is determined by what ballot you pull, which may not be accurately what you really are.
And that's also why you can't register as an independent in Illinois. There's no such thing.
Here's the other thing I would say, Steve, which is, and my industry, political consulting, we're a bit complicit, and this becomes a vicious circle. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we get candidates who come in and say, I want to talk about voting reform, open up the process. And we say, well, okay, we'll poll it, but voters don't care. You know, and so if you run on that issue versus taxes or education, schools or anything like that, like voters aren't going to vote for you because they don't think that that's the most important issue facing them. So
but that's a problem of the circle. Yeah, that's a problem of the architecture, right? Because if you've got 30 seconds, that's not your priority message. That's the big picture message.
My point, though, is, yes, you could say there's politicians who block this. But until voters say this is really crucial to our democracy, you're not going to have it be an essential issue in campaigns, and so then it won't change.
It might never be, because even when I used to speak on gerrymandering when I was party chairman, no one's paying attention to it. But the Supreme Court's going to speak here in a couple months, and what gerrymandering is, the elected officials get to draw their own maps and choose their own voters, and it just doesn't work anymore. There's ways to do it that comports with the Constitution, and it makes for primaries and candidates that are less partisan.
I thought we had the most ridiculously drawn districts. There's a district in North Carolina that looks like a dog bone that goes from like the far northeast corner of North Carolina down to the bottom of North Carolina, and it's a hook at the top, a line through the state, and a hook at the bottom.
Yeah, but the Supreme Court has never really spoken on that in 245 years, and they're going to now. It's a Wisconsin case, but North Carolina had a similar case. A
bunch of texters at 312-981-7200. We'll get to those coming up. Make America vote again. We want you to vote. I guarantee you the far left and the far right are going to vote. You're going to let them determine who's going to be in the race again? Because, again, if you don't vote in the primary, you're stuck with who the others voted to be in the general. That's why the primary is so important on March 20th. Coming back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
It is time we do what the people of Illinois want. Halt the advance of taxes. Stop spending money we don't have. Get our pensions under control. And give power back to the people.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Texter says, I used to live in that North Carolina district you were talking about, Steve. It's on the west side of Charlotte. I woke up one day and Mel Watt was my new rep. The funny thing is, he lived across the street from my old rep. The map was that thin across my street. Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady are here. That was the gerrymandering part of the conversation. And we're talking about why you should vote why people don't vote and how to make it easier and things like that. 630, Steve, I voted third party in the last two presidential elections, and people tell me it's the same as not voting. We've talked many times about how it's impossible to start a third party because the other two parties don't want it. But should you go in and write in and vote independent to express your opinion?
Absolutely. You should participate, whether that's one of the major parties or another party or a write-in. And I think your vote does matter because you're exercising your democracy. Look, the two-party thing is a function of winner-take-all elections. It isn't a function necessarily only of the two parties keeping them out. It becomes self-fulfilling, obviously. But because we have majority rules in this country, it's very hard for a third party to get traction.
Pat, take this on from the 815. 70% of the people on the ballot where I live run unopposed. Why am I going out of my way to go in and check boxes for people that don't have opponents?
That's a great question, but again, gerrymandering is a very boring topic to a lot of people, but they're unopposed because they've drawn the districts in a way that there's no way somebody from either party can win. One party's going to win, so the battle's in the primary. There's no opposition. It'll be that way this time, and until we change these districts and get some redistricting reform, it's going to be that way, and it's terrible. But go in and write somebody in if you feel that way.
I have a question, you guys. We were talking off the air about advisory referenda or referendums. Why are they advisory? So if you put a question, can Pat say there's going to be one on marijuana possibly this year, correct?
Yeah, I think that might just be at Cook County.
Might be, yeah. Referendum.
So why put, if you're posing it to the voters and they're speaking, why is it just an advisory? And if it's overwhelming, what happens then?
They become political footballs. And when they rewrote the Constitution in 1970, they made it very hard for there to be direct referendums. You need, I think, two-thirds of the legislature or hundreds of thousands of
half a million signatures
to get on the ballot. So instead,
and then legislative approval, I think.
And legislative approval. So instead, these advisory referendums, they're sort of like a lot of the votes in Congress when they were trying to repeal Obamacare. They're simply symbolic and give people something to run on. And I think a lot of times with the social issues, sometimes it had been about gay marriage or abortion or now marijuana. Mm-hmm. It's a way to activate both bases to say, okay, you may not like the candidates, but this is this really important issue that you care about. Come out and vote in this referendum, even though it has no impact on the law.
And that's what they did. I remember in the 2004 presidential race, they put some gay marriage stuff on to motivate the conservatives to come out, particularly in Ohio, I believe, which actually had a big impact on the election.
Did.
Well, I don't want to get too far afield here, too, but that's why when you hear things about the president could be censured or a member of Congress could be censured, it means nothing. It's a slap on the hand. There's no jail time. There's no fine. It's just a political penalty that your opponent might be able to use against you down the road. So what do you do? This is a question that we always ask. What do you do when the people who benefit from the rules make the rules?
You got to get more people involved. And I know it's easy to say. I do think, again, not for the right reasons, but sometimes when it is darkest before the dawn, to use the cliche. And in this Trump chaos and in this unsettling, scary moment, more people are, rather than turning away and saying it's all broken and nothing matters, they are participating. They're running for office. They're coming out and voting. And that's a hopeful sign. That's how things get changed.
Do you anticipate on March 20th we will get more than a 10 or a 15% turnout?
I think we will. I think people, again, regardless of the individual candidates running, feel this, you know, primal scream that they have to do something, say something. And I think voting is a way for them to come out and make their voices heard in this moment. And so, again, predicting turnout is a dangerous game. It's like predicting the stock market. But I do think if what we've seen in other states is true, I think you will have larger turnout.
And to put that in perspective, we have what state of 12.8 million people, maybe 900,000 will turn out in the Republican primary. So not very many people come, but they should.
It's March 20th, and I know it's a pain in the ass. I get it. There are people in other countries and other parts of the world who literally die for the privilege and the right to vote. I'm not even comparing them to you. This isn't, there are kids in China who don't finish their P's, finish yours. This is an honor. It's an honor to be able to vote. There are many ways to educate yourself. We'll take more of those up in the days that come, but we really are sincerely, whether you're Republican or Democrat, and just telling you, promising you, the far right and the far left are going to show up. They're not the solution, they're the problem. Express your voice, whatever your opinion is, and make America vote again, with a capital V. Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
See ya.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
752, the governor did his State of the State address yesterday. I've said it a million times here. I don't think the governor's asked for anything that's unreasonable. Yet, can he get it done if he wins again? The governor joins us now. Good morning, Governor.
Steve, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you. I'm in beautiful southern Illinois in DuQuoin, visiting with small businesses and community leaders here. It's going to be a great day.
Well, good. And tell them all we said hello. And yesterday you talked about the state of the state being ready. I like that word, ready for business, ready for everybody to pitch in. Is that the message?
Yeah, it absolutely is. We are a state of readiness. We're all frustrated by the political culture we've experienced in Illinois for too many years, but we are excited. We all know, we all have a firm belief that we have incredible economic potential, incredible future, if we can unlock that potential by working together.
If I get one question about you, it's consistent, that comes up again and again and again. Why is it the governor cannot work around the speaker? Can you explain in the simplest of terms why Mike Madigan is blocking everything you want to do in the state?
You know, he's been there for 35 years and created the status quo, so he clearly doesn't want to change it. But the reality is, everything that needs to be done, everything that the people of Illinois need, term limits and pension reform and property tax relief and regulatory relief to grow more jobs, it's all been done in other states on a bipartisan basis. Democrats, led by Democrats in most cases. California Democrats led term limits. Rhode Island Democrats led pension reform. Massachusetts Democrats led regulatory relief on businesses and changes to health care and government. We can do it in Illinois if we just focus on what's right and try to get politics out of the equation, and that's what I'm going to advocate for.
So when you get into, let's say you win, if you get into a second term, how's it different if Mike Madigan's still the speaker? What can you move that you couldn't move in the first four?
Well, you know, our first focus is to try to elect as many reform-minded Democrats as well as Republicans. And again, I don't believe this election's about party politics. I don't think it's about Democrats and Republicans fighting. I think it's about getting reformers in both parties, because there are good people in both parties who know our system's broken, who want to change it. And we are going to advocate, we're going to push to have every candidate for the General Assembly make a promise to the people of Illinois, make a promise to their constituents, promise to vote to put term limits on the ballot so people of Illinois can vote those up or down. Just put them on the ballot, please. The other is to sign a pledge to vote for anybody else. Doesn't really matter who, because there are great Democrats and great Republicans who would love to be speaker and could do a great job. Vote for anyone else other than Mike Madigan to be speaker. You know, 35 years is too long. Even if you're a loyal, hardcore Democrat, terrific. Select one of your own, another one who could be a speaker who will do the right things and to change the system. That's what we're going to be advocating.
Governor, you also said, and rightly so, that the state needs financial discipline and less red tape. But what I really focused in on was rolling back last year's income tax increase. How do we do that and get it done?
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to propose. We're going to show the clear path. It's very doable, and I'm the only candidate in this race, only one, who's really focused on that. I will be proposing my budget 2 weeks from now. It will be balanced again, as it has been for the last 4 years. My budgets have always been balanced, but they've been ignored by the General Assembly. They don't want to make the cuts. They don't want to work with me to get the spending reduction, so they ignored my prior budgets and passed out-of-balance budgets. We can't keep doing that. We can't spend what we don't have. We've got to stop that. So I will propose a balanced budget. It will have some spending reductions in it. It will have some changes in it. It will also propose to begin to roll back Madigan's income tax hike that he put in last June. And that I vetoed, but he was able to override my veto last June. But I'm going to show how with reforms, we will have the money to begin to roll it back down and every year tick that income tax increase back down. My goal is to get it back down to 3% over time. If we do that, along with providing real property tax relief to the people of Illinois, because the property taxes are our number one tax problem. They're crushing our homeowners and our small business owners. Get property tax relief by giving power to the people. Let the people of Illinois control their property tax levy through a simple voter referendum process. So the people can control whether the levy goes up or down or freezes for a number of years. We do those two things on taxes, we will create the opportunity to boom our economy and get higher family incomes.
There was talk of an executive order to make sure that legislators couldn't profit from property tax attorney appeals, I should say, in the way that Mike Madigan and John Cullerton do. What's the status of that?
Yeah, so I've signed the executive order, and what it applies to is the Illinois State Property Tax Appeals Board. Now, no longer can legislators go and take tax appeals there and make money from that process. I've been talking about this, Steve, you and I have talked about this for years. It's corruption at its core. It's a fundamental conflict of interest. So, and we've already done that. You know, legislators can't argue workers' comp cases. That, you know, it's a conflict because they regulate workers' comp and set the rates. Same thing on property taxes. We can't have Mike Madigan or any other legislator who sets tax policy then go profit and make money from the tax appeals process. Unfortunately, that's what's been going on in Illinois for years. So I've done it by executive order for the Illinois State Property Tax Appeals Board. And now I'm proposing legislation. We're introducing it right now to make it illegal, unlawful for any legislator anywhere in the state to do property tax appeals work. And create that conflict of interest. We want that to apply everywhere.
Yeah, well, I want it to apply everywhere as well. But here's the thing. Since property taxes are local and levied locally, how much control would the statewide executive order have over Cook County?
No, that's right. So your question is right. My executive order only applies to the Illinois State Board of Appeals because that's the only place I can control it.
But does that executive order light a fire under Cook County to change the rules?
Well, we're hoping it does. But even beyond that, I'm also proposing legislation. The legislation goes beyond my executive order. It applies everywhere. And we're going to put pressure on the General Assembly, I hope with your help and other help in the media, put pressure on them to pass that bill. That will end that corruption in our property tax system.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the biggest, most absolute example of a conflict of interest, in my opinion. Andre.
Governor, Illinois is in the running to get Amazon headquarters, possibly the Apple headquarters. You had some harsh words a couple of weeks ago saying, hey, you know what, Illinois needs to become attractive. There's no taxes in D.C., and you named a couple of other states as well. How can we get these businesses here immediately, and do you think those comments might have hurt our chances?
Oh, the comments at all help our chances because businesses want to know we're trying to improve. These are intelligent, thoughtful people. The state of Washington has no income tax, and Jeff Bezos helped lead the effort to make sure they kept free of the burden of an income tax. My point is just let's be honest about our challenges. Let's sell our attributes really hard because we have every attribute. Chicago is wonderful. O'Hare is wonderful. Our workforce is wonderful. Our universities are outstanding. Let's sell our attributes, but let's be honest where we have challenges, and let's show that we're working together to fix them. When businesses see that, they cheer, they clap, and they want to come. Businesses told me, Governor, stay strong. The changes you want to make are the changes we want to see. And as long as you're working on it and making progress, we want to come.
Governor Renner, I appreciate the time as always. We'll take this up again soon. And thanks for coming on again.
Terrific. Good to be with you guys.
Thank you. It's Governor Bruce Rauner after yesterday's State of the State address, and we're back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's 814. Picture this. It's before the Grammys. You're on the red carpet. And you want to talk to folks. Celebrities are coming in. Biggest names in music are coming in. You're all set. You've done your prep. You're ready to rock. And the boys won't stop golfing. CBS is on the fourth hole. People were hot. People were not happy that red carpet coverage got cut off. But Kelty was there. That's right. Our friend Kelty Knight, on her birthday, working her birthday, waiting for Jason Day to make a friggin' birdie so the thing would be over. Nice job by you.
Thank you so much. Listen, no one was more upset than my mother, who was like, I don't need to see golf. I'm waiting to see my daughter in her beautiful gown, living her best life. But we did have fun. I had a great time. You only saw 12 minutes of it, but I had an amazing Grammy.
Well, you know, people were upset, and I understand it, because they're not all nuts for golf like I am. But the red carpet stuff, man, that's a big deal. That's a big deal to folks.
The best.
Yeah, and it's a really fun time in the Grammys. You know, listen, we get to see the actors and actresses of Hollywood a couple times during the year at the different award shows, but really the Grammys is the one time that these big stars do walk the carpet. So if you missed them, you missed them, you know?
You know, I always, the women all look beautiful to me, and I know there's always questions. That's not sucking up. It's just, you know, that's me. But the men have to style in a way so they all don't look like they're wearing the same thing. And the cool thing about the Grammys is rock stars wear stuff. It's not all black tuxedos. So who did you like amongst the boys?
Oh, man. Well, I thought the Chainsmokers looked amazing, those young guys. They had, like, Alex Chainsmokers had this white suit on. Brothers Osborne, a country act,
Good
had
band.
These, like, bespoke, like, tweed suits and colors. It was beautiful. And, of course, you know, there's the John Legends and the Nick Jonases of the world that always look stylish. And, you know, it is hard for the guys, but I do give them credit, especially the country music guys. Like Thomas Rhett, while I was interviewing him, I looked down. He had those Gucci fur slide shoes on that you see, like, Kanye West wearing. And I was like, Thomas Rhett, okay. Like, you really throwing it out for the Grammys. So, you know, the guys definitely turned it up.
Andrea, say hi to our friend.
Hey, Kelty. First of all, I'm glad that we got to see you, actually, you know, once it ended, but I'm a golf fan, though, too. I want to know if you know any early buzz on Oscar dress. I know for SAG, for the Golden Globes, the ladies were in black. We had the white roses at the Grammys. Any early buzz on what's going to happen with the Me Too movement and attire for the Oscars?
There hasn't been an official note or letter written to the women of Hollywood yet, as far as the Oscars go. But if you're thinking about fashion, it's going to be big. And I'll tell you why, is that all of these designers pay and sponsor these women a lot of money to wear their couture gowns and say their name on the red carpet, and they really haven't had the opportunity this year. You know, I think the Golden Globes, everyone was in black, and then the SAG Awards was really fashion-y, but I think people were still a little bit timid because they were like, oh, I don't be the only one that comes in a crazy dress. So I think the Oscars, people are going to go huge, and the Oscars are always the biggest. This is where we see the ball gowns. This is where we see the fantasy. So I can imagine there will be something, but, you know, it's still over like a little bit than a month away, so we've got time to figure it out, but, you know.
All right, let me ask you about a couple stories you're going to be chasing for entertainment tonight, today. House of Cards is back. They're doing their final season?
Final season, and we're very excited because Claire Underwood is the lead, and this storyline this season, you know, a lot of people are wondering what would happen after Kevin Spacey left the show and Netflix didn't want to work with him anymore. And so I think it's very poignant in the world that we live in that House of Cards is going to revolve around Claire Underwood and say goodbye in that way.
Well, has anybody have any idea where Kevin Spacey is? I mean, did he stay in L.A.? Is he in England? Where is he?
You know, we don't know. One of the things that, you know, celebrities who, you know, go through troubled times tend to do is they go hide, you know, and it's kind of the hopes that you can hide out for a year and then, you know, have some sort of redemption tour. We saw Billy Bush just do it after his, you know, blunder on the bus. And so it's like you kind of just want to go away. So no one really knows where he is. The paparazzi can't find him. And we'll have to see, you know, if people are going to forgive him for these discretions at some point. I don't know. You can.
I got to ask both you guys this. Am I the only one? Listen, I love Ellen. And Ellen and I used to hang out a bit.
Yes.
You know, when I was doing tons of stand-up and used to be on the show all the time and stuff. And frankly, I haven't talked to her in years just because we went different ways. Mm-hmm. But I love Ellen. But Ellen's got a mean streak. Really come out since this game of games thing.
Oh, yeah.
Am I the only one that's uncomfortable about the screaming contestants? Kelty, what's up with that?
I mean, listen, Ellen is busy. You need to give your friend a little bit of a break. She's got 75 shows on, and she's tired.
Right, but no. I'm not talking about not contacting me. I'm talking about the contestants, and they're screaming, please don't drop me in the hole.
Right.
That whole thing. I mean, am I the only one that's uncomfortable?
No, I think it's fine. I think the show's great. I love a good game show, so I'm fine with it. I'm fine with all of it.
I do, too, but when they're suspended, there's a little part of my stomach that drops when they drop, too.
I guess that's the point,
I have a little bit of fear.
They're not going to let anyone drop on national television.
Right.
If they're going to drop, they'll drop in secret, and we'll never know about it.
And it's pre-taped, right? So...
Right, pre-taped. Yeah. So,
actually,
they've already decided who died.
Yeah, Kelty, I was just going to say, if someone dies on the show, you'll cover it before they actually air whatever happened. So, and we have
you'll know about it, but it's fine now, and just enjoy the ride, you know?
And we have a Meghan Markle sub on Suits, finally?
Oh, Meghan Markle. Are you a Suits fan?
Yeah, well, yeah, I can't say I'm hooked on it, but yeah, I liked it okay, and now I hear Katherine Heigl's back on TV.
Yeah, so I'm a major Suits fan even before Meghan Markle was becoming the next princess. My husband and I watched every episode. So, listen, it's the end of Suits is over as the way we know it. You know, Patrick Adams, who played her love interest on the show, is leaving. Meghan Markle's obviously leaving. They're adding Katherine Heigl. She's going to be a new series regular, a new lawyer who really comes in, is no can't be contained at Pearson, Spectre, and Lit. And we'll see what happens. But I think this is like the end of kind of this era of Suits, and then they'll move it on. I'm surprised they didn't just cancel it after the two main characters left, but now it's so hot. People are going back. Meghan Markle's so famous now. People are going back and watching the series on Hulu, and all these new fans are coming out. So I think it's actually smart of them to continue the show. I did see Priyanka Chopra, you know, movie star, this weekend at the Grammys. And we were trying to find out from her if she's going to be a bridesmaid at the royal wedding. Because, you know, she's really close friends with Meghan Markle. Mm-hmm. She didn't say anything to us. And she also played it really coy when she was talking to Harper's Bazaar. And she just said, if you see me there, you'll know. So she's like being a really good friend and keeping all the wedding secrets.
Kate Middleton for sure will be a bridesmaid, Kelty. With the story yesterday, it was kind of a cute story how Kate Middleton has really welcomed Meghan Markle into the family because of Kate Middleton's relationship with Prince Harry. And when he was single, they would binge, what was it, Game of Thrones together. They would just like make popcorn and all hang out.
Can you imagine what goes on behind the scenes at Kensington Palace? Like, they have these little houses right down the street from each other. They can't go out into the real world. All you have is the people in your little enclosure. So I'm sure Kate Middleton is like, thank God, there's another lady friend here for me to, like, hang out because I've been with these damn brothers. You know, every woman who's married knows how much she needs her girlfriends. So I'm excited for them. And listen, it's got to be, I think Meghan was born for this. I think knowing her in Hollywood, she wanted to be uber famous. Like, I don't think she shies away from that at all, but it's got to be nice to have like a friend that's been going through it too, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Kelty, you're the best. You're up early. We appreciate it. But then again, with your energy level, I picture you sleeping about 6 minutes a night anyway.
Yeah, no, I just plug into the wall. I'm like, actually, like,
oh, you're like a phone. You just said phone charger.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Thanks as always. We love you.
Stay warm, guys. Happy Super Bowl weekend.
Yep, thank
Bye,
you.
Bye, Kelty.
There you go. It's Kelty night.
She's great.
Way too much energy.
The Super Bowl normally draws a fair amount of celebrities, and the network that airs it usually has these just accidental shots in the crowd of some star of a show they absolutely have to promote.
Yeah. Fox is really good at that.
Yeah, they are. CBS has an older lineup. So are we going to have like the cast of The Big Bang Theory in one section?
It's NBC.
Oh, I thought it was a CBS game.
No, it's NBC.
Oh, well, NBC. What's NBC prime?
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace.
Yeah.
This Is Us.
There you go.
Two shows that don't need promotion.
Yeah.
By the way, the reason we had Kelty on, Kelty Knight, is because Dean is traveling back from Los Angeles this morning. Is Dean back with us tomorrow, or is it a super long flight, about 36 hours, 48 hours long?
He's going to do his best to avoid you in this show, but I think he'll be back.
All right. Well, that seems right. That does seem right. Joe's not wrong about that. From Lauren Fialco. CEO and owner of Westy Boutique.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, my husband's a regular listener. I recently opened an online business called westyboutique.com. We specialize in selling unique and trendy hair bows. My husband mentioned how much you talk about your granddaughter, Abigail Grace. I thought it'd be nice to send you some. I have them here, right here, as a matter of fact, because watching
how pretty
on the feed.
They're red, white, and blue.
Yeah. Got very a little pretty. Polka dot situation going on. Pattern.
Very pretty.
Styling it up. Earlier on, Sandberg tried to style my hair by putting one in. It didn't work out so well.
Not so much. I think they'd look a little cuter on Abigail.
But you will still try to braid my hair after the show?
I thought Dave was going to do that, but if he can't, I'd be happy to step in.
I'm a little clumsy when it comes to that.
Enjoy this package on us. Thank you for that. And Abigail Grace, well, I like it very much. Lauren Fialico, Westie, W-E-S-T-I-E, Bow, B-O-W. Boutique.
Cute.
Westie Boutique. Thank you for that. As we continue, Adam Hoge live from Minneapolis, St. Paul in the Super Bowl. Coming up in about 10 minutes. Your headlines next on 720 WGN.
It's Adam Hoge and Sports Central live from Radio Row in Minneapolis at Super Bowl LII.
Yeah, that means I'm 52.
52. Under that.
Every afternoon, 1 till 3, not just this week, but every day until we cancel him. I mean, 1 to 2. I said 1 to 3.
Yeah. He'd go till 3 if you ask him to.
But I understand that out of the gate, the eyeballs are on it. People are watching it. So that's, or listening to it, I should say. That's good.
Yeah.
Adam Hoge joins us live from Minneapolis. Are you on Radio Row?
I am on Radio Row.
And you guys are still at the Mall of America?
Still at the Mall of America. They haven't moved this yet.
Have you got a chance to visit every store?
No. No. I'm kind of afraid of the rest of the mall, so I've just kind of stayed put. Although, we did get to ride the roller coasters the other day.
Yeah? What'd you think?
Better than I expected.
Yeah, for a mall roller coaster, it's an actual roller coaster.
Yeah, it whipped you around pretty good. I had fun. Yeah. It was good.
Wait a minute. You're on Radio Row surrounded by media people, and you're afraid of the rest of the mall?
That's a good point. You should want to get away from them.
I'm afraid of malls in general.
Oh, really? You get a little itchy? Get the hives going?
Yeah, I mean,
I spent a lot of time in that mall, and, you know, now I'm almost old enough to be a walker there.
There's been plenty of those this week, too.
The Super Bowl Sunday, it's going to be crazy cold outside. You'll be warm inside for the game when the Eagles, who are now a 4.5-point dog, something like that, to the Patriots. Yep. And the Patriots get together. What do we know about Tom Brady's paw? Is it okay?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think he's milking this a little bit for some Under Armour publicity. And I don't know. I think he's having some fun, too. He'll be just fine. I mean, if he was fine 2 weeks ago throwing the football, I would think he'd be fine Sunday.
Is he doing full practices?
Yes, he is. The big question from an injury standpoint for the Patriots is actually Rob Gronkowski, their great tight end, who's probably going to the Hall of Fame one day, too. He's still coming back from that concussion, limited in practice yesterday, is expected to be good to go Sunday, but technically he's still in that concussion protocol.
I actually have an early copy of Rob Gronkowski's Hall of Fame induction speech.
Oh, really?
It's the entire speech. Dude, awesome. All right, back to you, Dave.
Well, what about the Eagles? Are they kind of getting overshadowed a little bit up there, Adam?
You know, it was really interesting Monday night at their big opening ceremonies where both teams got an hour of media time. The Patriots went first, and it was a zoo. And then there was like an hour in between the two teams, and a lot of people left. And when the Eagles came out on the stage, there weren't as many people out there. Now, it's not like no one was there, but yes, they're getting overshadowed. There's definitely been way more attention on Tom Brady and the Patriots, and it probably should be. This is the eighth time they've been in the Super Bowl. It's you know, one of the greatest dynasties we've ever seen in sports, and the Eagles are the underdog. So, but you know what? They're milking that, and they're embracing that, and it's part of the reason why they're here, even though their starting quarterback got hurt in December.
Yeah, see, I don't think that's a bad thing for Philadelphia at all,
right?
Especially a team that hasn't been to the Super Bowl before. It's playing with a backup quarterback. They have played this lack of respect thing to their advantage throughout, and I think, I'm sure they'd like to have the attention, but I did find it interesting that Alshon Jeffrey sort of, I wouldn't say that he dissed the Patriots' success, but he kind of did. He kind of said, we don't really care about their dynasty.
Yeah.
And well, he shouldn't.
No, he really shouldn't.
And it's hard to actually get Alshon to say something that you can actually react to. So I'll take it. And he's right. They shouldn't be worried about that this week. You know, they need to be worried about Tom Brady and stopping the Patriots' offense. But, you know, they just need to go about what they're doing. The Eagles are a really, really good team. And I think that that's getting overshadowed this week because as everyone talks about the Patriots, the Eagles, when I saw them in person in November, were outstanding. Yes, they lost their quarterback, but they also have a really good backup in Nick Foles, and he's been playing really well. And if he plays like that Sunday, they're going to be fine.
The one knock on Nick Foles for the years he's been in the league is inconsistency. Have a great game, have some bad games, have a great game, get hurt. This is no time to be inconsistent. What's the chance he puts two in a row together?
Well, and I think that that's obviously the big question in this game because you know what you're going to get from Tom Brady. No one's thinking Tom Brady is going to come out and have a bad game because it just doesn't happen, especially on this stage. With Nick Foles, you don't know that because, like you said, Steve, inconsistency's been a problem, and it very well could happen. And unfortunately, I can't predict that. We just got to watch the game Sunday and hope he plays well and hope it's a close game.
Any Bears personnel in town?
Jordan Howard has rolled in. I'm going to be trying to talk to him today. I heard that Kyle Long was going to be here, but haven't seen him yet. Obviously, the big storyline for us is just Brian Urlacher and his Hall of Fame candidacy. And actually, today on Sports Central, I'm going to be talking to the Hall of Fame president, David Baker.
NBC has the game, so that's El Michaels, Chris Collinsworth. Who else has NBC got in? I believe probably everybody that has ever worked for the Peacock will be in town this weekend.
Yes, yes. Michelle Tafoya, Dan Patrick, Mike Tirico, I believe, is involved in the broadcast, so they got everyone here.
Listen, we've gotten some disturbing news, and before I get to the disturbing news, I'd like you to first plug your show again. The new Sports Central, a tip of the hat and the legacy of the great Sports Central show for all those years before Cap and Waddle were jailed. And you're on when again?
1 to 2 live today and tomorrow from Radio Row, and then Monday through Friday all the rest of the weeks. But you can listen to it anytime as a podcast, too, on iTunes and Google Play and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And you got a guest you want to plug today, or you're still working that?
Well, we got David Baker, the Hall of Fame president, and Jay Glazer from Fox Sports, who, by the way, is really, really good friends with John Fox. So we haven't heard from John Fox since he got fired. Yeah. I imagine Jay might have some insight on what's going on with John Fox and if he'll ever coach again.
Does he know he's fired? And the coach thing, this is my last word. I'll give Dave the last word after my last word. Doug Marrone was out of the business. Nobody had any respect for him. Nobody thought, well, I can't say nobody, but he was not even on anybody's B list, let alone a guy that was looked to be in a Super Bowl in the short order he's been with the Eagles. Have we got any Doug Marrone magic in Matt Nagy, do you think?
Well, are you referring to Doug Peterson?
Or Doug Peterson, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Marrone's in
there. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the hope, right? Because Matt Nagy came on the same track as Doug Peterson under Andy Reid, became the offensive coordinator in Kansas City, and then got the head coaching job. And he's done a really good job in Philadelphia so far. So I think that that's what Ryan Pace is hoping to get out of Matt Nagy. And again, I've been trying to find people to say something bad about Matt Nagy, and I just can't do it. You know, when Mark Trestman got hired, Tim Brown came out and was actually very critical. Most people say complimentary things about these head coaches when they get hired, but Tim Brown actually came out and was critical of Mark Trestman. I think Jerry Rice was also a little critical. So I haven't been able to find anyone to say anything bad about Matt Nagy. So, I you know, we'll see.
You mentioned Kyle Long, and there was a picture that he posted on Instagram yesterday in a surgical cap, and it appeared to show him going into surgery again. So I don't know if he's at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's, I was trying to get clarification on that because I saw that tweet. I heard Kyle was going to be here, and then you see he's having surgery again. So I know he was scheduled for 3 surgeries, 1 on the neck, which he had last month. I believe that labrum is getting worked on. And then the 3rd's kind of a mystery, but I wouldn't be surprised if that ankle needs more work, too.
How many? The guy is what, 32 maybe?
Oh, not even.
Not even. No.
He's still in his late 20s.
Is he?
Yeah.
29. We just looked it up. How many surgeries has he had at 29 years old?
How many has he had the last 2 years?
He got to get frequent flyer points for the time he's in the hospital. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, they got to get him healthy because And he also had the hand problem. Oh, that might need to be operated on too, because I was told that there were torn ligaments in his hand. Usually need surgery for that.
It's like an old Buick. Put it up on a rack, see what's wrong with him, and fix it all at one time. You're doing great work there, man. Congratulations on the show. But, you know, Adam Hogan, Dave's not fond of you, but I am quite fond of you.
I can't wait for the expense report.
I think you're one of the best things we have going here. All right, here's the disturbing thing. Mark Carmen posted on Facebook he's in love with Tom Brady. What's going on there?
That's disappointing. I didn't see him doing that.
Yeah, he's in love with Tom Brady. Okay, let's go live to Joe Romano. Joe Romano. Let's go live to Joe Romano, who can read the post. What do you have, Joe?
Yeah, our own Mark Carmen said, "We'll never say a bad word again about Tom Brady. Dude is impressive in, dude is impressive in person, pro in every way."
What? But there was a love in there, wasn't there? Wasn't there a love in there? I'm hyping this too hard, aren't I?
Oh, well, no, here's the thing.
Here's the rest of his quote. Brady, I love him and I want to move in with him.
Yeah, you have to read between the lines for the love part.
Well, Tom Brady is impressive in person, isn't he? Adam?
When he looks in your eyes, right? I think that's probably what happened. Mark Carmen went to Tom Brady's press conference, got too close to him, and he got, you know, maybe some eye contact with Tom Brady, and
got
that
the
can
Tom
change
Brady
you
mojo.
As a person.
Sure.
Yeah, the picture is really, you know, you can see by the gaze.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, mm-hmm. you know who both Adam and Carm got interviews with Mm-mm. separately? Mm-mm. The guy that plays Leon on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
JB Smooth? Yeah. JB's great. I love JB.
It was the highlight of the week. I'm not
gonna lie. JB Smooth. Yeah. He is tremendous. I believe Mark Carmen loves Tom Brady the same way. Yeah, and by the look here, it's the same way that Vice President Pence looks at Donald Trump. They're all very much in love. So, all right, Carms, you have fun there at the mall.
That's Adam.
Wow. Say hi to Doug Marrone. All right, Adam.
Well,
wow.
Bye, Steve.
It's time for me to go to bed. Thanks, buddy. Carms is the other guy?
But he's back.
Wait, is Hogue the taller guy?
Yeah, a little bit taller.
Okay, which is the one that we used to coach the Bears?
I don't know. You're way off.
I got to get
you
a program.
Someone said that you called Nick DiGiulio Nicolas Cage this morning, and I just thought the texture was up a little too early.
We were talking about Nicolas
Cage. I know,
Cage.
But I thought you had signed off.
Did
and
I call
said,
him Nick Cage?
I thought no, but now I'm thinking
and
I'm signing
like
with
I
the texture.
I got plenty of sleep last night, but I'm a complete train wreck. What's coming up, Steve?
Metra's fair.
If that's your actual name.
It is. And I just have a question about Mark Carmen. How's Brady going to feel about all those stuffed animals?
That's a great point.
Are they going to live
could
together?
Change the whole relationship.
I know, right?
Do you want me to do something at this point other than shut up? It'd be bad if I shut up. It's the show. All right, play the thing. Play the thing. Go ahead, play the thing.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
There's an inside show meeting. Joe, did I ever send you those new bumps?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Just making sure.
I got a handful of them played already.
Yeah, just making sure. Inside show meetings sometimes happen on the show.
I know, right?
Joe's done a great job, isn't he?
I think he's doing fantastic. Yeah.
Debatable.
All right, if you feel it. Text question of the day, why don't you vote? No judgment, just trying to figure out why you don't vote. A guarantee of the right and the left and the far right and the far left are showing up for the primary on March 20th. And the way it works, the system that you're not going to be able to change just because you want it to change, is whoever shows up and votes in the primary determines who's in the general. Mm-hmm. And the general is when a lot of people will say, how do we get such crappy choices?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because you don't vote in the primary.
You have to vote.
The research is out there. It's available. We'll talk more about that in the days and weeks ahead leading up to March 20th. But here's some textures this morning. Why don't you vote? 630, I do vote, but it's hard to keep going back. Twice my candidate has gotten the most votes for president, but hasn't gotten a job. It's a rip on the Electoral College.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe, and I've said this before, the Electoral College is outdated.
I agree.
Its purpose was not for the intended developments that have come up, and it needs to go away.
Well, we're the only country in the world who does not base their elections based on the popular vote.
I think Luxembourg does a secret handshake. That's how they decide.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I think so.
Smallest country in Europe, by the way.
630, how is the district gerrymandering map drawn? Every 10 years, the party in power gets to draw the map. And I mean any way they want. They can make Mickey Mouse ears. They can do anything they want. But they determine it by where the strength of candidates are and how to stay in power. Nice job, Madigan. Remember years ago, thanks, Obama? Thanks, Madigan.
Right.
6-3-0, why vote in a presidential election when the Electoral College negates over 3 million individual votes? That's another one.
These are decent points.
Yeah.
You should vote, though.
But you have to be a part of the change, yes, by getting involved. 847, why can't you register as an independent in Illinois? We touched on this in the 7 o'clock hour.
Great point.
Because you don't register with a particular party. You pick a ballot.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, too. I would argue that more people would vote in a primary if they didn't have to declare in Illinois.
331, they say if you don't vote, you can't complain. I think it's the opposite. If you didn't vote for this mess, then you absolutely have the right to complain. Sorry, doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't work.
You know, I've always said that if our democracy dies, it's going to be campaign finance and gerrymandering.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
The two things that'll kill it.
I think you're exactly right. All right, we need a break before the news. All right, CLTV is joining us any second now. And thank them for that. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Joanne Lippman in a book called, that's what she said. It's about women in the workplace. Paid less, treated with less respect. This isn't just about sexual harassment. One of the statistics cited in the book is women get interrupted more at meetings than men do.
I would agree.
What are you
with
talking
that
about? Oh, sorry.
See, I do agree.
And we found the tape where I called Nick DiGilio Nicolas Cage. I think this just goes with the past 20 minutes of the show where I didn't get anybody's name right, and I don't even know my own name at this point. Here's the show at 6:20 this morning. All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right, man.
That's Nicolas Cage.
You did say it. All right.
Sleep deprivation is a thing.
Do we all get new names?
Wow.
Can I be
I swear, I thought I got a lot of sleep last night.
Maybe it's your haircut. You did get a haircut, didn't you?
I washed it in a shrink.
Can I be Angelina Jolie?
That's funny.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
The movie in my head.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Live on CLTV and 720 WGN, the Steve Cochran Show continues. This will be for my friend Dr. Sam. Remember Dr. Sam, the veterinarian? We have him on quite a bit. Probably due for another Dr. Sam visit. Also, we got to get Paul Coit on. Paul Coit, our friend from London, on the Meghan Markle situation and the Queen possibly stepping down at 95 and finally giving Chuck the hat.
What?
Chuck may get the hat.
Oh, yeah. Finally.
Beyond sexual harassment, how about your New Year's resolution? Focus on the solution. The book's called That's What She Said. Joanne Lippman, award-winning journalist of many awards. You should see her trophy room. And she joins us now. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great title for the book. Why'd you call it that?
So it's got a little bit of a double meaning. I think you probably know that's what she said is a dirty joke that we are reclaiming. But also, that's what she said resonates with every woman because so many women have had that experience where you say something in a meeting or in a room and nobody seems to hear it and it's just crickets. Mm-hmm. And then 2 minutes later, a guy repeats exactly what you just said. And everybody says, oh, my gosh, Bob, you're a genius. What a great idea. And every woman is thinking, wait a second, that's what she said. So,
It's a great title. It's a great title.
Yeah.
And the volume at work seems to be as important as the experience at work. Which do you rate higher?
Well, I think, look, the reason I wrote the book is because, you know, in addition to women being not heard, every woman understands the experience of being marginalized in some way, not respected, and that translates into lower pay, your promotions. Women talk amongst themselves about these issues all the time, but what we haven't done until now is talk to men about those issues. And so the reason I wrote That's What She Said, and the subtitle is What Men Need to Know and Women Need to Tell Them About Working Together. And the reason I wrote That's What She Said is because I feel like women talking to each other is half of a conversation that can at best solve half of a problem. And let's bring men into the conversation.
Joanna, I absolutely loved your book, and I love the descriptions that you give. Tell the story about, this pertains to when women ask for a raise, which is really never. Men will go in and say, I want a raise, women won't. But you gave a story about a young lady who got advice from her boyfriend, I think it was, and she kept pricing herself higher and higher, but was scared to do it.
Right, right. And that's so common to women. Men are four times more likely to ask for a raise than women. And when women do ask, they ask for 30% less on average. And the story I tell in the book is of a young woman who basically was given a job offer, and her inclination was just to say yes, which is what I said to my first job, right? And in fact, I said yes, and then the man who was hiring me said, well, don't you want to know what the salary is? And I'm thinking to myself, no, I just want the job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And men don't do that. And in this case, this woman went back, and it was her boyfriend who said, wait a second, I would never take the first offer. Go and ask for more. And she did that two or three times in a row, and she was surprised to see that it works. And it does work. One of the reasons we have this persistent pay gap is because women don't negotiate for their first jobs, whereas men do. And so you start out at a disadvantage.
I think that's a really a great sales point, frankly, for your book.
Right.
This is a man bashing. The book is weighty if you want to hit a guy over the head with it. but this book is a very fair examination of the workplace that, as you just said, it's important to teach men how to get more out of the talents of the women they work with, as well as to teach women how to ask for it.
Right, right. It's really on both men and women to solve this problem. And at the end of the day, it makes us all more successful. I mean, companies that have more women in leadership are more successful than those that don't. And mixed work groups have more successful outcomes, and they're more creative. And there's reams of research that shows that. And so it's really in all of our interests to work together.
Joanne, what is your advice on comparing? So if a woman kind of gets enough courage to go in and ask for a raise, is it not a good thing to start comparing yourself to others at your level, be it men or women, so that you're comparing yourself to?
That's such a good question because, you know, historically, women have been penalized when they ask for things. This is one of the reasons women don't ask, is because they're marked down for it. However, we're in a very fortunate time right now where there's a lot of data. And I think that data is, you know, shed sunlight. And so you can look at a salary.com and glassdoor.com. There's a whole series of sites that now show you what people at your level in your kinds of jobs earn. And it's very, very helpful to arm yourself with data. So, you know, women very often when they ask for things, people say, oh, they're emotional or they're abrasive. There's a lot of these code language that helps to, you know, prevent women from getting what they deserve. And so arming yourself with data is very useful.
Is the line between assertive and bitchy something you can learn, or is it in the eye of the beholder?
It's very much in the eye of the beholder. I read a lot in That's What She Said about unconscious bias. And that's something that men as well as women have. We all have these biases buried so deep inside of us. We don't even know they exist. But the key with unconscious bias is once you recognize it, you can't eliminate it, but you can take steps to counteract it. And that unconscious bias is what leads people to say that women who ask for things are bitchy. And every woman, I spoke to so many women who said, you know, why is it that I'm one or the other? Like, I'm always either a bitch or I'm too meek. Right. I'm never in between. And that doesn't apply to men. And that's because when women act outside of the stereotype of what females are, they get dinged for it. And so, you know, it's really important for all of us to recognize and then to take steps to counteract it.
Another interesting chapter, too, is where you talk about diversity training. And more often than not, it doesn't work.
Right, right. There's research that shows 30 years a Harvard professor looked at 30 years of diversity training at over 700 companies, and he found that for women, it made things worse. And part of the reason was that the traditional diversity training actually got men angry and resentful because they felt like they were getting beaten up on. And you know, this unconscious bias training, which is now replacing traditional emotional training. That's the idea behind it, is we all have these biases, men and women, and we're trying not to beat up on the men. But I think the most important point here is offloading any of that sort of training to make us more diverse, offloading that to HR is wrong. It's just a mistake, right? This has to start in any organization with the leadership. If the leadership doesn't believe it, the CEO, the CFO, the chief financial officer, right? Those are the people who really need to embrace this, because it's not something that you're going to undo a lifetime of bias in 2 hours of training.
And small meetings are better than big, right? I mean, you get a big meeting of a whole company and, you know, guys can F off in the back and not pay attention. But if it's your own division or it's your own group, I would think that would be more effective.
Well, actually, if women make up like less than a third of any group, their voices generally are not heard. And I think that's one of the issues. That's one of the reasons why women say something and nobody seems to hear it. It's one of the reasons women are interrupted. Women are interrupted 3 times more frequently than men are, even at the Supreme Court level. Female Supreme Court justices are interrupted 3 times more frequently than male Supreme Court justices.
How about that for a stat? It's okay for men to yell at work, but women don't think it's okay to cry. Is that a bad thing, a good thing, or neither?
So one of the issues I get into, and that's what she said, is the difference in communication styles. And one of the biggest issues, I interviewed tons of men. I crisscrossed the country. I went around the globe interviewing men. Primarily, like, there's a lot of good guys out there. The vast majority of guys are not sexual predators, nor, by the way, do most women think that their colleagues are sexual predators. So I talked to guys who are trying to get this right, and they all were making an effort to kind of close the gap with women.
Last word to you, Andrea.
Okay, my final question, Joanne. Again, I absolutely loved the book, but say you make up your mind, you're going to go in, you're going to ask for the raise, and they always say be prepared for what your boss is going to say. So if they say, no, we don't have enough money, what should your retort be?
So, again, the data is extremely useful in understanding that. And also, just knowing to ask is a huge issue. Just understanding that you want to ask, because, again, men are 4 times more likely than women to ask for a raise in the first place. So women should know and be more aggressive about asking in the first place.
There's a cheat sheet at the end of the book for those of you who get the book and go, oh, I don't have time to finish it and want the shortcut before you start it. In tips and takeaways for men and women. But you've done fine work here, which is why I always say, Joanne, with books I like, and I don't put books on the air unless I like them, get 2 copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one. As a matter of fact, share it with a man in your life or share it with a woman.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think great advice.
That's what she said. Joanne Littman, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks,
books
Joanne.
Are sold and downloaded.
And she's going to be at the Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville by you Monday, February 26th, and the next day, the 27th, downtown here at the Union League Club on Jackson Boulevard.
Signing, speaking, probably both.
Both.
Okay.
Signing and speaking.
9:21, more of the Steve Cochran Show in a moment. The text question of the day, why don't you vote? Just taking these answers without judgment for our Make America Vote Again campaign. Texters, why don't you vote? Why do you choose not to vote? I'd like to see your answers. 312-981-7200. That's the text line.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
When I was a little kid, my mom worked at Cornell University in upstate New York. And she brought me home an autograph of Ed Marinaro, who at the time was the biggest thing in college football, even though he was playing for Ivy League Cornell. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Oh, yeah.
And went on to have a nice pro career for the Vikings and the Jets. And I met Ed a few times and talked to him. And then, of course, was a key figure on the Laverne and Shirley program for a while. A bit of an acting career.
Wasn't he on Hill Street Blues?
I think he did do Hill Street Blues. I think you're right about that. I just looked up and saw a glimpse of him on this morning's Today Show. And Dave, Ed got old. I mean, I don't know how that happened. Yeah, that is. You haven't seen somebody in forever, and you look at him, you go, wow, they're old.
He's 67.
Yeah. If Ed saw me, I think his first question would be, what the hell happened to you? It is 9:27. Sandberg, what do you have?
You know, Kim Gordon, in those neighborhood news things that we run during the news, she mentioned that Miller's Pub is closing. Mm-hmm. I think it's on State Street. And my dad gave me a little fact here. My grandpa, Papa Dick. And
Papa Dick is the nickname of the grandpa, by the way, for clarification.
His name is Dick Sandberg. My dad is also Dick Sandberg.
Yeah, yeah.
But Papa Dick and the person that ended up being his third wife, Donna, but we call her Freddie, the third and longest wife, they got kicked out of Miller's Pub when they were dating because they were making out too passionately at the bar.
Wow. Grandpa getting it done.
Get a room.
Is that why Grandpa had three wives? He's a little too passionate?
Yes,
is that the deal?
That would be the case. So,
Well, that's a special memory for the Miller's Pub. I'm guessing that's probably not the only couple that was kicked out for making out.
No. But I like that.
It's a nice story.
PDA, you know, before PDA.
Did Grandpa stay married to wife three?
Oh, yeah. He did. So Freddie was the wife I knew. I mean, he and my grandma, my dad's mom, were good friends. They had one of those divorces where it was kind of amicable after the kids grew up.
That's not something that happened back then.
No. And like we would go on family vacation.
I mean, I give you a hard time because you get along with Pat's ex-wife.
Right. And the stepdad. We're a good group together. But when I was little, we would go on vacation and to northern Wisconsin, where Mary goes, you know, Hayward, Gordon, Wisconsin. And my grandma and her husband, Papa Hugh, would be there.
No one has regular names.
This is like
my
a children's story.
Papa Dick and his wife, Freddie. Uh-huh. And we would all be on vacation together. And I never knew that not everyone's grandma and grandpa and
you thought everybody got along.
Well, they all did get along. We were on vacation together.
So you were shocked when you found out that exes don't always get along.
Right. And I
didn't get along with any of my exes. As a matter of fact, any woman that I dated at any time, I insisted that she join a nunnery. Just immediately go into some convent somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know that we'll ever be vacationing together, you know, Pat's ex and the.
But you get along remarkably well.
Yeah, we do get along. But so that's anyway. But Papa Dick and
when
Freddie,
I give you a hard time, I just think it's unique. I think you have a uniquely healthy relationship with the other spouses.
Yeah. And the kids' mom and I, if we want to get stuff done, we're the best people to work together as opposed to
the idiot men.
That's
what she said.
I know you already have a text question going, but if you've ever been kicked out of Miller's Pub for making out, go ahead. Text that in as well.
Speaking of the text question, 847. I hate that you have to pick a Democrat or a Republican. I'm a moderate Democrat, but there's been many times when I'd like to choose a Republican.
See?
We talked about that this morning. But the only way to get the rules changed is to vote for people who are willing to change the rules.
That's true.
630, Steve, why vote? The country is run by millionaires and billionaires. If the Democrats win, the Republicans don't let anything get done. If the Republicans win, the Democrats don't let anything get done. It just doesn't matter anymore. I understand the fatigue. Yeah. I understand the anger. But you can't have this attitude if you truly want change. Otherwise, the crumble is going to continue.
You absolutely have to vote.
But I certainly understand what this texter's saying.
I get it, yeah.
I get the frustration.
It is frustrating.
But it's never been worse because not enough people are voting, in part. 309, maybe if elections did not involve crazy versus corrupt, as my favorite morning host characterized the last election. Look, again, I get it there, too. But how do you get better candidates?
Yeah. Are you the favorite
get
host?
Get better candidates, well, let's say.
Yeah.
You get better candidates by supporting people who are not part of the system, who are willing to make changes. Or, to be fair, people who are in the system who are willing to make change.
Yeah.
Not everybody in Congress is nuts. Not everybody's corrupt. That's why I keep saying, far right, far left, that's the problem.
You know, and honestly, you can look at any of these elections. Look at the last election. That is actually a perfect example of why vote, because everybody thought Hillary had it in the bag.
Including Hillary.
Exactly.
Right. We'll come back with the headlines in just a second at 720 WGN.
When you hold that cup over your head, the feeling that you get is indescribable. It's better than any vacation I've been on, better than anything cool I've ever done, better than kissing the prettiest girl in school. That was as good as it gets.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Really? Better than kissing the prettiest girl? I don't know. It's our friend Adam Bursch. Handsome Adam Bursch on the way back from Madison, doing a great job on TV, talking about our Blackhawks. And he joins us from his vehicle. You know, Adam, earlier today I was taking credit for your TV career.
Were you, Steve?
Yeah.
Everything runs through you in this town. I know that.
Well, last summer at the Hawks tournament at Butterfield, you and I kept bumping into each other, and I said, why aren't you doing more TV? Next thing I know, you're a big shot on TV. It had to be me, wasn't it?
100%. Like I said, everything. You should be my agent after introduction you gave. Although I did lie about kissing the prettiest girl there, I agree with you. That was probably a little bit of a lie. Hey. I was a little bit excited there, but
yeah.
I should be paying you some royalties.
Now, what were you doing in Madison?
I was actually doing the Badger hockey game on TV, the Wisconsin Badger hockey game on Fox. So I was back there doing a television game for them, and I'm just being back in Madison. I had a couple days off here during the All-Star break for the NHL, so I wasn't working. So I went back to Madison and hung out for a couple of days. Simple. I'm a simple guy, Steve.
Yes, you are. But in the best possible way. All right, so let's talk about our Blackhawks. A 2-1 win over Nashville. Feels like a watershed moment. Feels like, hey, maybe we turned a corner and it's time for a run. Are you feeling that?
I am. And if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I think if I was being honest, I would have said I'm not really so sure. But I'm never going to count out these guys that the Blackhawks have, and they're veteran guys that have won 3 Stanley Cups. I think you'd be foolish to ever count out a team that has that experience and has the guys that they have in that locker room. And then I was working for the game, Pat Boyle, and I called the game between the periods on NBC, and you know, it felt like a week ago they were 10 or 15 points out of a playoff spot, and it was going to be hard to do it. And then before the All-Star break, they go in and they absolutely thump the Detroit Red Wings. And by the time their plane lands back in Chicago, Colorado had lost. Now they're 4 points out of a playoff spot going into the All-Star break. If I'm on that plane, I'm like, holy crap, everybody was just saying we suck and we've got no chance, and now we get back home to Chicago, we got 4 days off, and we're only 4 points out of a playoff spot. That's a 3 or 4 game run. Now we're right back in the mix again, and then they come back and beat Nashville, who I think in their mind is a tough team for them to beat. They don't match up good against them. They always struggle against Nashville. They need confidence. Anytime your team is struggling, you'll grab any little thing you can to get some confidence. And beating a team like Detroit on the road and then coming back and beating a team after 4 days off of kind of kicking your feet up, having a couple drinks, probably a little bit out of shape, to come back and beat that team, they've got a couple things to look forward to and feel good about their game. And then keep in mind, Corey Crawford sounds like he's not too far off from coming back. There's another boost from this team in these last 30 games. I'm not ready to count this team out yet, and I don't think anybody else should either.
Still, Adam, when you're in this situation, this is a situation this team hasn't been in all that much in recent years, where it seems like every game is a big game. What has to be the mindset in the dressing room, and who sets the tone for it?
Well, you said it perfectly. This team and has not been in this situation where, you know, us media clowns are talking how they're not doing well and they may miss the playoffs. And they hear that stuff, and it bothers them. And I think personally that it's affected them a little bit this year. Hearing all this negative talk about them has put a little bit of heat on them. And then you hear about some of their older veteran guys on the team that haven't had these superstar amazing years other than maybe Patrick Kane. That can wear on you when every day you're hearing these things and you've got to go to practice and you've got to finish games. Then you've got microphones in front of you with people asking you questions about why are you guys doing this and why aren't you winning more and why aren't you scoring and what's the problem here and what's the problem there. A human nature would just allow those kind of negative thoughts to creep in and make it tough to climb out of the hole. And so I think that's affected some of their play this year. And they've needed something to grab onto. And I can tell you in that dressing room, I listen to the interviews, I talk to some of the guys, and for the most part, away from the cameras, they're very positive. And they're like, let's look at the guys that we have in this locker room and the veteran guys that we've had that have won. We're going to find a way out of this. We still believe in this group, and we still believe in the guys. And they've played well the last month. They haven't got all the results they wanted, but they've played well, and they haven't got a lot of puck luck, and pucks have been not bouncing in their favor. The last couple games, they were getting the goals, and they were getting the timely goals, and they were getting the saves that they needed, and that's why they've went on this little run that they've had the last couple of weeks, the last 3 games that they've played. So in that locker room, though, I can guarantee you Jonathan Toews is saying, forget all the noise, let's play. Brent Seabrook has always been the vocal leader in that locker room. That's who he is, and he struggled for a bit. We all saw him get scratched, then he responds was scoring a big goal against Minnesota right after being scratched. He's elevated his level of play. And I think now if you get some confidence, you're going to see a guy like Jonathan Toews start kind of taking over again. Brent Seaver's going to raise his level. I know Duncan Keith's pulling his hair out that he hasn't scored a goal yet this year. He demands more for himself. I think these guys are all going to slowly pick up their level of play. And then look at these young guys that they've got, like a Vinny Hinostroza on a 5 or 6 game point streak.
Yep.
These young guys aren't rookies anymore. They're veteran. They're comfortable. The Jonathan Toews, Seabrook, Sharp, they make your young guys feel comfortable. They include them. So they're going to raise their level. I think there's a lot of room for growth on this team, and I think that they still haven't played their best hockey, and I think they're starting to now.
You know, the captain's had such a weird year because he worked his tail off in the offseason like he always does, even changed a few things up. He's not scoring as much as he used to, maybe not taking over games the way he used to, but it's also, this again, it's what you're talking about, Adam. This feels like luck about where the puck's bouncing because he's hustling harder than I've ever seen him. So I hope you're right. I'd love to see him break out and get on a run here.
Yeah, and I agree, Steve. When I'm watching, and a lot of times if you're just watching a game, just look for a guy's effort. Do you think he's putting out? Do you think he's giving it? And Jonathan Toews has certainly been doing that. And pucks haven't been finding him, and pucks he's shooting that used to go in just aren't going in. But if there's one thing I think that's been holding this team back, it's their power play. And I think they're at 14% yep. right now. And in the NHL nowadays, if you're anywhere below 18% or so, it's 17%. It's really hard to win games. And your power play percentage and your penalty kill percentage need to combine for over 100% if you want to be successful. And they're probably at 96, 97 combined. And in the NHL, when you combine those and you're below 100, it's really, really hard to win games. And I can tell you, too, as a guy that wasn't on the power play ever, because I wasn't any good, but I would see these guys, they like to get their cookies and have their piece of cake on the power play. That's when you rack up points in the NHL. Sure. There's nobody that leads the league in scoring or is in the top 20 in scoring that doesn't have 15 or 20 points on the power play. And they got guys that have one or two or three power play goals playing big-time minutes and big-time situations, and that frustrates star players. When you can't get those easy freebie goals or a couple freebie assists a night on the power play, well, now your production's going down, and those are the easy times in the game for the star players. And when you're not getting any production on the power play, that trickles into your five-on-five game. That trickles into everything because now you're frustrated. Now you're looking at all these other players that you compare yourself in the league that you want to beat in points, and now you're trailing and you're chasing them all the time. And don't let anybody lie to you. These superstar players, they know how many points they have. They know what other guys in the league have. Patrick Kane wants to lead the league in scoring every year, and
sure.
that's a compliment. That's not a selfish thing. I want Patrick Kane to lead the league in scoring because if he is, that means we're winning hockey.
Amen. Amen.
And so when they're not producing on the power play, boy, it's tough to get any confidence.
Before we let you go, we have an MB Financial Bank. MB means business fan question. Oh, by the way, people want to know about Corey Crawford. Like, he's back when he's back. I wish we had better news for you, but mm-hmm. he's not healthy till he's healthy, and he's not ready to play yet. All right, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. The question comes from Kia. Kia says, what is some beneficial advice you would have told yourself at 21 that you know now?
Oh, my goodness.
What did you wish you knew at 21 that you know now?
Tough question for all of us.
That's a tougher question for Burrish.
Yeah. No, I mean, for anybody else, it'd be tough, but for me, it's not that tough. You know that, Steve. Guys like us, we kind of have our stuff together always. But certainly, when I was 20, I was in college at Wisconsin, and,
yep.
and I wish I would have probably studied a little harder. I was lucky enough to have my sister in my classes with me, and I never sat too far away from her. So,
did she let you cheat, or did you just do it anyway?
I think half the time she knew, half the time she didn't really know, and she didn't really have a choice because, we'd go to the college club bar, and she somehow always got to the front of the line and got in on time.
So there you go.
Kind of the trade-off. You know, her and her friends got to get to the front of the line at the college club. And
my brother's good for something.
A little bit of schoolwork. She helped me with a little bit of schoolwork, so I probably wish I would have been a little more on top of that. But the one thing that in my hockey career that the fitness thing and how you show up to training camp every year is what I tell the young guys.
Be ready to play.
You guys tell me was showing up to training camp in the best shape, like game one of the season. That was what was important to me. Is you show up day one like it's game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals, and you're going to give yourself a chance to be successful.
Dave wants to know how the traffic is. He's got to drive back to Madison.
I'm heading to Madison this afternoon.
I'm back. I'm here. I'm back in Chicago.
So
easy,
cool.
Easy drive this morning.
Good.
That was cool. Yeah.
Seriously, man, you're doing great, great, great work on TV. We love watching you. Thanks for jumping on.
No, thanks. I got great Pat Boyle next to me also, so he makes it easy.
Yeah, he's marginal. Thanks. That's Adam Burrish. We love Adam. So I'm laying in bed last night, and I'm thinking of Bill Leff.
Oh, yeah. That's scary.
Why is that scary?
Wait,
it's normal.
What?
Because I'm watching Match Game with Alex Trebek. And, of course, we play the Match Game here on the show.
Yeah. Not with Alex Trebek.
No, he does Jeopardy.
Alex, what I said? Man, I have not gotten a name right
Nicolas
all
Cage.
Morning.
You
Nicolas
are
Cage
out of
Nicolas
control.
Cage. Nicolas Cage is a host of Match Game.
Right, everyone knows that.
Jeez,
I have not gotten a name right all morning long.
That is pretty funny.
With Alex, one of the Baldwin boys.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the deal. So the question on Match Game was, it's singles night at Chuck E. Cheese.
Uh-huh.
They took all the balls out of the ball pit, and they replaced them with blank.
Oh. Everyone's mind goes dirty.
Mine didn't.
Oh. Mine neither.
Singles night at Chuck E. Cheese. Got
yeah.
an answer?
Yeah. Oh, what would the answer be to that?
The contestant said fish.
Fish is the right answer.
Come on, what? Really?
That's the correct answer.
Because he thought, Alec said, it's seagulls night at Chuck E. Cheese.
Stop it.
Because, obviously, why wouldn't it be seagulls night? Who hasn't heard of the sea?
Sure.
So I laid there and I laughed like a mental patient.
Good.
The dumbest answer I've
ever. No, that's a great answer.
And it's even worse than any answer we've had on the Match Game.
Yeah, it's absolutely
that Dave
worse.
Had that dog one, remember?
Yeah. That was the
Sorry
worst answer
to throw
ever.
You under the bus.
The oh, dog's
thanks,
name was
Wendy.
Dog.
So on behalf of Alice and Dan
wow.
and Marcia and Stan
and
Nicholas Cage.
Margaret and Jimmy, all working on the show, we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Scott. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Sorry, Dave.